This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Ro is off getting that necessary important surgery we talked about. He's going to be okay, and we'll hear from him later. He may or may not call into the show. But in the meantime, Richard Roper isn't in studio to not be on air with us, so continuing our
social media talk. That's exactly right, Anna. And I won't be here all the way to 7 o'clock, and I'm not looking forward to talking to Ben Bradley and Tom Scaling and Lester Holt and everybody else. So I really can't wait.
Glad you decided you aren't joining us in the studio today. All right. Enough of the double negatives.
Sad to be here.
You heard in Ryan's news at the top of the hour there, some local news that hit everyone by surprise. Chance the Rapper released four new singles today, but it wasn't something that just made music industry news, because within those singles, he also announced that he is buying the Chicagoist. You know, he is now going to move into the local news media business, which I think is a little surprising.
Yeah, but good for Chance. He joins the Block Club and the Tribune and the Sun-Times and the WGN news team and everybody else continuing the crusade for real news. And also, Chance, I've got some paintings I did years ago that I think might be worth something. He's in a buyer's mood lately. Doesn't it feel like
he really
he's
is.
Feeling very purchasey?
I think a 25-year-old could handle it. What do you think? The Chicagoist, 25-year-old?
You know, it kind of gears toward that younger demographic, doesn't it? I was a fan of it because it had great hyper local entertainment and neighborhood coverage, you know, from restaurants and bars and things like that to everything going on with festivals, but the kind of stuff you don't often hear, the color that like hyper locals would talk about. I loved that part of it.
And look, you know, when Citizen Kane came out and Orson Welles, he wrote and directed and starred and produced it, and he played the newspaper king, Charles Foster Kane. He was 25, same age as Chance is now. And Chance the publisher, I wish him the best. We can talk. You know, I've got some ideas.
Also, I think having money puts you in a buying mood.
It does.
It does.
And then sometimes it puts you in a bankruptcy mood, but he's got a lot of it.
I think this is going to start something, though, because, you know, back in the olden days, people used to make their declarations in like a town square. And then when you get to the Revolutionary period, it was letters, right? George Washington would write a letter to someone and then it would be posted and that would be the news. Now Chance is doing it in song.
He is.
Here's how I want to get my political point.
Let's hear a little bit. You mentioned that, Ryan. Let's hear a little bit of...
Be careful.
We can't actually play the one song that's called What I Might Needs Security, where he expressed this news that he bought the Chicagoist, and then it was confirmed throughout the day by various news organizations. But here's a little bit of one of the other songs he dropped today.
Today I missed my workout, but it worked out. Now I'm missing work now, but it worked out. Had to buy a crib for up on my first house. Had my first kid, I love how she turned out. I love how she turned up, even if I'm burnt out. I'ma have so many C's, I could have a birdhouse. I'ma love on a mama, I hope it worked out.
We're playing that song because the one, I Might Need Security, has, it's profanity-laced, and it's difficult to even isolate one part of it in order to see what he says.
The language of our times. Guys, I've got, Ryan, this you can follow up on this breaking news. Lil Wayne has bought the rights to the Chicago Daily News and is going to resurrect
it.
So we're looking forward to that.
Remember back in the day, Richard, when like the big news or the media barons would announce their acquisitions through these carefully worded press releases and how it was going to be so great for the community and that kind of thing, and profanity lace rap song.
No, we just got one of those in your email. Check that on the
I don't want to. I really don't want to.
It's interesting. But listen, nobody can deny Chance's commitment to Chicago and to the betterment of the world at large. He spends as much time making appearances, making donations, doing various events as he does making, you know, this memorable music. So let's see what he does.
He seems very civic minded. Remember, he offered $1 million to CPS to try to set up and establish arts programs, and has a real strong commitment to making our schools better. And you know, you're right, he puts his money where his mouth is, and he is civic minded, and so hopefully he's got a lot more money, because as you know, the newspaper business and the online world, you requires some replenishing sometimes.
The free press has never been more important than it is now. This just in, Drake is getting Steve and Gary back together, so everybody's trying to do different things.
Perfect.
Different things out there. I don't know, I'm just getting a lot of feeds here. I guess it depends on who you follow.
Well, it was interesting because remember Chicagoist went away when it was DNA Info
in
New York and Chicago.
A great news organization. And now that's basically a lot of DNA Info people. people are at the Block Club Chicago, mm-hmm. which they did through crowdfunding mostly. People who believed in journalism. And actually, it was great because every time they'd get more money, they'd say, we're going to hire another journalist with the money that the citizens are coming up with.
How cool is that? So you saw the donations and how they were really working for you. And that's really a part of this new media world, because advertisers and subscription-based, a lot of people want media to be free online, and it's not necessarily good journalism isn't free, and you have to hire reporters and have quite a few of them in order to really cover a market like Chicago, for instance.
And there's still a lot of enterprise journalism, things we talk about, and we talked to Ben Bradley about the things they do at GN and Chuck Gowdy at ABC,
right.
and radio reporters and obviously newspaper reporters. A lot of reporters out there are still doing the good old-fashioned work where they uncover injustices, where they find out something that's going wrong in a neighborhood, where things need to be fixed. And then everybody else just picks up on it, and people go, oh, I get my news from Twitter. No, you're just reading the feeds on Twitter of legitimate, responsible news organizations.
They're
just collecting it. They're not. Twitter doesn't have a newsroom at all.
Wouldn't it be nice if Twitter and social media actually threw a few bucks for the number of retweets or the number of hits? Because a place like the Sun-Times doesn't get anything for if your stories go viral and it gets hit all over the world, people read it and they regularly do.
At the very least, link to the origin source, to the people who did the original reporting. Everybody should do that. Because people even tell me, they're like, well, I know you do your reviews, but I just go to Rotten Tomatoes. I'm like, Rotten Tomatoes, I'm on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
All Rotten Tomatoes is great, but all they're doing is collecting everyone's reviews from the Sun-Times and the Tribune and the New York Times and BuzzFeed, et cetera. They don't have critics. You know, again, they're just putting everything together in a neat bundle so people can access it.
Are they allowed to, they can quote you, of course,
yes.
But can they use substantial pieces of your review?
They're actually really good about it. Rotten Tomatoes, they're very pro journalists and pro critics. They'll put a quote from your review on their homepage and then a link to the Chicago Sun-Times. If you want to read Richard's review, go to his paper. They're very good about it. And they talk to all the critics about that. Is it okay? It's actually especially for up and coming critics, it's an honor if you get on there, because now you're on the site, you know, with the New York Times and the LA Times and everybody else.
So the Sun-Times would get credit for the hits, the number of hits, and that helps drive revenue because you're seeing that kind of volume.
What if Chance could win the Pulitzer Prize one day?
he might just do it.
From the Washington Post for their investigative series.
He wants to commit it to diverse voices. So it might.
Which is great.
The Chicago is the future might not be exactly what it was in the past, but I think it's a very noble idea. And you think about it, the Reader and the Chicagoist now would be two black-owned news.
That's correct.
Organizations.
Originally,
the Reader just sold.
Yes, correct.
Recently. So he would, he says he says it was about. What did he? You can't really quote the lyrics, but he basically said to root out racism, and that's one of his initiatives, and that's one of the goals of the new Chicagoist.
I think it's a great thing. And you know, I remember a few years ago, Chris Brown posted a video, and he couldn't figure out which color Lamborghini to drive that day, as he was showing everybody his 20 cars of different colors. Mm. And I'm like, okay, it's your money, you can do what you want with it. Look what Chance the Rapper's doing with his money.
Right. And exactly. And he stands up and he makes a difference in talking about social justice, but also about money for education. And that's one of his big causes. So you can only imagine that will be, part of what the Chicagoist is committed to as well. Some of the things he fights for. Very cool. Let's, we got to talk to Ben Bradley on the other side of this from WGN-TV to tell us what's coming up in the WGN-TV news. But right now, let's go to Ryan Burrow and see what's coming up here at the bottom of the hour in our news.
A man who is charged in the cold case of 1988 of the rape and murder of an 8-year-old girl appeared in court today. We'll have more on that coming up.
All right. Violetta.
Hey, you can slow things way down in Indiana Amish country. Homespun crafts and homestyle cuisine. Cruise in Indiana. That's tonight on WGN-TV News at 9.
Speaking of the WGN-TV News, time to head over to our friend Ben Bradley. Did I say that right? Ben Bradley. Over at Bradley Place. Hi, Ben.
Triple B.
Can we hear him? No, he can't hear him because I didn't turn his mic on.
Hello.
My bad.
Hello.
Hi, Ben.
Hello. Now, it's actually double B. Triple B would be a reference to Barbara Bird Bennett, the now imprisoned former Chicago school.
Oh, good point.
B-squared.
You don't want to associate yourself in that situation.
We'll go with B squared. I go with R squared.
Or the Better Business Bureau, which has a very positive review and positive sort of thing.
I hear I have at least a B minus with them.
Oh, Ben, you're an A in our books, for sure.
You say the nicest things when Roe is not there. It is
true.
To make you feel bad for offering praise to people.
What's coming up? I know you guys are covering this story, which I think is fascinating. We saw the red light camera lawsuit result in millions of dollars returned to Chicagoland drivers. Now there's a new one out there.
Yeah, the Sun-Times had an interesting write-up on this. This is basically this law firm that really was the first to legally hold the city's feet to the fire when it comes to those red light cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Now going after different violations, saying that the law says the maximum motorists can be required to pay is $250, and that would include the fine and any penalties. And they say for years the city has been accumulating late fees and other things from motorists for more than $250.
Because they do double after a certain period of time,
exactly.
And things like that.
That's
and then suddenly it's
woo.
Don't I know it?
Says the traffic reporter who should know better.
Thanks,
yeah,
Violetta.
So these are fines like, you know, parking too close to a fire hydrant, blocking an alley, that sort of thing, that are nuisance fines for people in the city of Chicago.
And the yellow paint is a suggested 15 feet, not actually 15 feet in some cases.
Tell it to the judge, or in this case, the administrator.
But that's part of the story, too. That actually brings us to another part of it. Didn't the level of evidence drop because of a deal the city cut or something like that?
So why would the city agree to cap out at $250? It was part of this grand bargain that allowed them to shift the hearings to a different type of judge and thereby lowering the standard for proof. If you've ever gone in to fight certain types of tickets, you know just how low the standard of proof is in the city of Chicago.
But of course, Ben, they know too that most people just can't take the time to fight the ticket in most cases.
Exactly.
I think that's right.
And if you try to contest it by mail, that's just funny. You know, you might as well be like in the mailroom. It's a Wonderful Life for all the stacks of mail.
Right.
I would like to meet that guy. Because you got to imagine there's some interesting things written on the outside of the envelopes for the return address.
And that's true.
There's some interesting evidence inserted into the envelopes. Let's just say I hope the guy who works for the city, who has that job to open all those letters, is wearing gloves.
Oh my God. Well, can you imagine, like, I just picture an office with three guys reading the, you know, the protests from people or the, you know, who are contesting it. I parked illegally. Here's a photo. I gave birth to triplets. And the guy's all in the office.
Nice try.
Rejected. Send it back
nice
to her.
Nice try. Yeah, I'd love to hear from a listener who's ever gotten one of these ever in the history of our lives.
Got off on
who's won?
One. Who has won that? Because I was outside the House of Blues for a concert. It let out. And they had a construction zone across the street there. This is, 4 or 5 years ago. And because of that, they had taken down all the no parking signs.
Right.
So this entire length of 2 city blocks from across that, they had taken down those signs. And all of us who were at the concert, a lot of us, had just parked there thinking, oh, well, this is parking.
Yeah.
When we came out, all of us were towed.
Yeah.
And so all of us went and took video of there's no signs here and walked up and down. I brought that to the administrative hearing, and she sort of did that. What was that laugh again you guys just did?
Surely you jest.
I like
don't call
video.
Me
Well, I love when they...
Video's very dark. I said it was nighttime.
Yeah. Well, and half the posted signage, they put it so high that it gets lost in the trees. So it's like, you know, you look up and you're like, oh yeah, it does say tow zone between 11:57 and 11:58 p.m. And of course, there are ninjas working as meter maids. You know, I mean,
Wednesdays between November and April.
Mm-hmm. Where do they come from? They come so quickly. If you've gotten a 2-hour parking, you know, sticker and you put it in your windshield at the 2-hour and 2-minute, if you walk out, you'll be meaning the person who's writing your ticket.
Exactly.
It's like, where did you come from? Oh, I rappelled down from the Hancock Center.
I ride underneath your car. I'm in the axle.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
It's like impossible. But you know, hold on. We do have a caller who actually says this happened to them, and all I have to do is be able to patch them in so that we can hear them. She's up. Okay, Elizabeth, let's hear you. What's your story?
Hi. I was parked downtown, and I had the ticket in my car, and I was there. They sent me one in the mail, but they took a picture of the wrong car. So all I did was argue and say, that's not my car.
No. Prove you don't own that car, Elizabeth.
Isn't it true that you were seen in the parking lot of a new car dealership between now and then?
At no point in your 53 years of life have you ever owned or ridden in a Ford. Liable.
So, wait, Elizabeth, did you go to the place on Superior or one of those places and fight it in that way in person?
Yeah,
or you?
I mailed it in.
Wow. Golden ticket.
Didn't have to pay. What happens in that circumstance? Because I've never heard of this. Do they send you a note back?
Stickers on the outside envelope with smiley faces? Confetti comes out of the response?
I was. No, they just sent me a back and said it didn't match. We're sorry. And that was it.
Amazing.
No fee.
We found her.
No, nothing.
And then you went and bought a lottery ticket.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would hope so. Gosh. Well, that's
congratulations.
That's a great story, Elizabeth. Thanks for sharing it with us.
I love listening to you guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
We love listening to you, Elizabeth.
That gives me hope.
We're always listening.
For humanity. You can actually fight a ticket in the city of Chicago. The one thing about the meter maids, though, a little pro tip. When it's raining, you kind of get a little bit of a pass. Oh. And when it's really raining, that happens too. I've just noticed, it's anecdotal. Ben couldn't back me up because he would have to investigate it thoroughly. Yes. And then, it wouldn't all add up. What else do you guys have?
Anna, pro tip, they don't like to be called meter maids.
Well, you guys just did, so I get called out for that. I know that. So they're the Department of Revenue, actually, is what they are.
Excuse me, Mr. Parking Professional,
Revenue
sir.
Agent. No, agent. You go, I'm sure, Agent
sir,
Johnson.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you do for a living? I'm a revenue agent.
That's exactly
right. I'm known to be very, very polite to them, and especially when they have that ticket book out.
Yeah, interesting about Chance the Rapper jumping in and announcing via song that he is apparently purchasing Chicagoist, isn't it? Did you guys read that story?
We did. We were just talking about it, and I think it's great news. I miss those smaller websites.
Here. If you listen to his lyrics, though, he may have issues with some of what's reported. So is he buying it because he didn't like Cranes doing an article on his new place?
He did mention.
He did.
He's done some past work about the Sun-Times. He wasn't happy with Mary Mitchell.
Yes.
So he's saying that he wants a diverse voices and to fight racism with this site
and stop writing about my child support and where I live.
Yeah, you can't mention that. I bet they won't mention that on the Chicagoist. Yes. How are you guys working around that on the WGN TV News tonight with the sound? The audio from that song not being replayable.
I think that story will sound something like beep, 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 beep.
In this new single, what do you mean you have it here? Brian, our audio guru, is telling us he's got it edited
out.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's beautiful.
Brian, you are just... Wow. Brian is a master with a beeper. He's a master beeper.
Sonic genius.
Best lyrics.
I went into him earlier and I said, amazing. Could we play just a piece of it? He goes, No. I said, just a piece of it. I mean, isn't there like a piece? A small, tiny little... He's like, no, there is not. So that's what you got. You can borrow it tonight when we'll be watching.
Thank you very much.
WGN TV News 4, 5, 6, and 9 o'clock.
Good to be with you guys.
Thank you, Ben. Time to head over to Ryan Burrow, see what's coming up bottom of the hour. Or no, we're going to check the actual news right now. And it's sponsored by Penny Mustard Furnishings.
Hey, keep listening after 5:30 for your chance to win a family four-pack of passes to the 11th annual Blackhawks Convention. That's at the Hilton Chicago, July 27th through the 29th, courtesy of Matt Nasey. I'm changing lives through math. Get convention passes at ChicagoBlackhawks.com.
We'll be there, no big deal.
Yeah. No big deal. We certainly will. Let's check in with Mr. Tom Skilling at this moment, and it's sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems.
Anna!
Tom, how are you?
Good. Richard, how are you doing?
Doing great. So good to hear your voice as always, Tom.
It's good to hear your voices too, guys.
Tom,
happy Thursday.
Thank you. We were talking parking tickets before, and I imagine you've never gotten a parking ticket.
Never.
No.
Yeah. No.
Because
never.
You go into the WGN parking lot, and you're there for 12 hours, and then you go home, and you got to sleep, so there's no time to get parking tickets.
Tomasuto tried to charge us for parking over here in our big open parking lot at one point. This was a year and a half ago.
He's always up to something.
Yeah. This is after Sam Zell bought the place, and we had the You Now Own the Place banners all over the station. Yeah. So Dean Richard shut that down, though, pretty
Thank
well.
Dean.
Yeah, he put a gate across, Tomasuto did, across the entrance to the parking lot, and Dean would have nothing of it. So he kind of cleared the way for the rest of us. There was a rather heated verbal exchange.
I'm sure. Now, do you get spot 1A right outside the door there, Tom?
No, I'm way over by Lane Tech.
Lane.
I walk a couple of blocks, I'm just kidding.
I don't think that was an episode of The Office.
I know.
Wait until I tell Van Refrigeration. I'll give him a piece of my mind. No, Tom's got, of course, the same vehicle that the Tornadoes Chasers had in the movie Twister. So he needs like three parking spaces for all his gear.
That's right. Yeah,
it's very close to the ground. I always wonder how you deal with speed bumps when you're in that.
It's
difficult.
Badly is how we deal with it. It's kind of rough. I never have been a big one. They do have select parking spaces for certain folks over here, and it's never been something I've gone after. I'll park wherever there's a space open.
Good for
and,
you.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
love you,
Tom.
You
guys have a lot of space there.
There is a lot of space.
Yes.
In fact, it's one of the joys of working out here on Bradley Place, because we have that beautiful parking lot. And you know what they do? They have a lot of the folks who go to the Cubs games park here.
Mm-hmm.
And then they arrange some buses down there, or people just walk down to Wrigley Field, because we're not that far away from Wrigley.
No, so. Pretty close. Do you ever have the moms from like the little, all the kiddie areas, the soccers and the bounce houses and the gymnasiums and stuff, come try to park in the WGN TV lot?
No. You know,
I think every birthday party I've gone to in the last seven months is right back there in that little area behind WGN TV.
Well, you know what? They've got a fence in it between us and that facility's parking lot. So there's
you don't want a bunch of six-year-olds running across your parking.
That's
garage.
Right. And we have an industrial park across the street. All kinds of businesses there, but they have plenty of their own parking.
Mm-hmm.
So no, we have no troubles over here.
One of the few places in the city, I think,
I
where you don't have parking issues.
Where there's an actual parking lot.
There's a massive one.
Yeah, it's nice because when I've been on the, I guess with the morning kids, you know, they're like, hey, you can drive up, you have plenty of parking.
It's wonderful,
it's
isn't
nice.
It, Richard?
Yeah, it's a nice little perk. I'm like,
it really is.
And when people come here, what do we tell them? Double park, pay somebody to sit in your car for you. It's just really tough around this area.
You know what, why don't you just call in? Don't even come.
It's kind of like, it's like a Mission Impossible movie here. It's like you could come up the side of the building. We'll let you in.
You know, it's interesting. The history of this facility up here on the northwest side is quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, we were all consolidated down at the tower.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, this was built, I think, in 1964, is my understanding. And it was to be a northwest side distribution facility for the Tribune. Up here, and they decided to separate radio and television to move out here because they needed more room for the TV facility, and so it moved out here. And then, of course, radio went back downtown again back in the 1980s. And you guys have moved yet again beautiful facility.
It is. You got to come over here some point, Tom, because I think Choose Chicago, the tourism bureau, should take pictures here of the beautiful city. The skyline views, the river views are amazing.
You guys, the view you Navy have Pier. Of the city is really amazing. And as you say, you can see the skyline there.
The Exhibitionist in apartment 37C.
Yeah.
And
that too.
High rises across the
Swiss
way.
Hotel gets a little racy sometimes. Some of the guests there.
Sure. I can imagine.
Put on a show for us.
You know, too, Tom, and you guys know this as well, too, but when a lot of, for generations of Chicagoans, the two addresses they knew growing up were their own and 2501
That's
West Bradley Place, because they were trying to get mom and dad to
you're
send
right
away for tickets
postcard.
To Bozo.
Absolutely.
So you'd ask a kid, what's your address? Well, hey, little boy, you're in second grade. You need to know your address by now. Well, 2501 West Bradley
so
Place.
True.
Those tickets were so in demand. The joke here was that you almost had to anticipate conception, to get a letter in here, for your bid for tickets. Yeah. For your
Ann and
kids.
I just got ours the other day when
right.
we were kids,
but
so we're very excited. We're going to show up, and maybe Bradley could do a trick for us or something.
Yeah.
Throw something into six buckets just to make us feel like we didn't waste our time.
If anybody can do it, he can do it.
I think it was 6 years by the time we got him. Does that sound right to you? Was it that long?
I think that's right, Anna.
Because my mom started, I think, when we were tiny, and my littlest sister was six, and she got picked for the grand prize.
For the grand prize game, the bucket game.
Yeah,
and
the
then
bucket game.
You went straight from childhood to adulthood and waiting for your Oprah tickets to arrive then.
Exactly.
That was also a six-year wait.
That's another one, among the most prized tickets in Chicago.
They were. When your
Bozo
kids won
and
something.
Oprah,
You know, Tom, I thought about you because I was reading about the latest out of Hawaii and how they have really cracked down on all the businesses that were shuttling tourists to view the volcano. And before they were operating, or they were giving out special licenses to operators who could get fairly close. And I think you were on one of these boats.
Oh,
but then they
have
that incident. And since then, they've really cut down on it. Now they're, all the tourism specialists are everyone who's involved in the tourism business there in Hawaii is saying, hey, you're killing us. We got to open this up again. We got to figure out a way because a lot of people want to go out there and see nature in action.
I hope, Anna. You know, that was tragic, that explosion and the lava bombs and all that it set off. But what an experience. I mean, we got within a couple hundred yards of it, and that was the very same boat that was involved in this this explosion a couple of days ago. And it was something. We went out there in 30-knot winds and 12-foot seas. And they warned us. They said, a lot of you are going to get sick, but don't be embarrassed by that because the crew members get sick too. But it's an hour boat ride from Hilo, which is on the southeast side of the Big Island, to the volcano access site. This is where the lava pours into the ocean. And another little island had formed there, and apparently the explosion took place on that, and it no doubt had to do with the fact you were putting 2,100-degree lava into cooler ocean waters, and there was the fit didn't work.
No.
It wasn't a happy situation. It was pretty explosive.
How close did you actually get on the tour you took?
It was close.
You felt the heat on your face?
Yeah. And you know what was interesting in it? The water splashed up, because we were in waves. And it was like bathtub warm. They took a temperature. They said the water was 120 degrees. So it was like being in a hot bathtub when this water came over. And you didn't mind. We were in and out of tropical showers, too. So we were all soaked to our skin. But what a fascinating thing to see. But, that's a volatile situation.
It
highly
is.
Dynamic. And that's why they don't let, aircraft. I took a helicopter ride over that, and they wouldn't let you below 3,000 feet. That's been imposed on all the helicopter folks there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't fly over the thing. You're some distance from it, but you still get a good view of Fissure 8, they call it, which is the one that there are about 20 fissures around the volcano itself. The lava's not coming out of the volcano. It's coming out of a crack in the ground not far from it, and they call these fissures. And so that's the one that's producing this 8-mile river of molten lava, which goes into the ocean, and the boats then take you up close to where this is going into the ocean, and it is a sight to see. That's acidic steam that comes out of there, but the trade winds are very steady in Hawaii, and so they blow this away from you, and we had no problem with that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But
I just imagine the team of scientists who are trying to learn as much as they can.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the USGS people, the U.S. Geological Survey people that run the Hawaii Volcano Observatory have been doing an amazing job. I mean, they've literally been educating all of us about volcanology. I've heard terminology I'd never heard before, and it's fascinating to hear what's going on out there. But they're absolutely fascinated by it. You can imagine, one of the rare events in nature to have a front row seat to that, and the things they learn out of this are fascinating too. But we're literally seeing how the Hawaiian Islands came into being over millions of years.
It's a great point.
Yeah.
Now, that new island you just mentioned is getting a lot of attention. But
It was only about, I think they said it was about 30, 40 meters across. A meter's about 3 feet. So, it wasn't a real big deal. But what probably happened was the lava went under the water. And then over time, a dome developed under the water that finally broke above the surface. And so it looked like a little island had formed out there. And it was from that dome of molten lava that this explosion emanated. So, they'll be very careful. I did think, though, when we were bobbing around out there, I sat next to
it. Did you think about it?
I thought to myself, where do we go? If this thing goes over, because the water was pushing you toward the molten lava, and that's not exactly an option, if you're thrown into the water.
No.
Because I don't know about you, but my body probably would pretty quickly give up to 2,100.
You're aerodynamic. You're good. Hey, listen, I love all of this. This is great to hear about the beauty and the splendor of God's great creations and the origin of volcanoes. But
I
want to get to the important stuff, Tom.
And
I want to have some beers on a boat on the lake on Saturday. Is that going to happen or not?
A tiki bar?
And there's also the Big Mac race starting. That's a fascinating weather system we've got spinning up. Yeah. It's unusual by late midsummer standards to have such a large scale, strong system. And what's going to happen, Richard, is it's interesting you bring that up, because with time we're going to develop a pretty well developed northerly wind flow. And you know what that does? That churns up the lake when it's full fetch, when it runs the full length of the lake. So the waves will be building Saturday, and you will not want to be bobbing around out there Saturday night or Sunday. And I suspect we're going to have one of those beach alerts too for you know, rip currents.
That's what I saw, dangerous waves and rip currents. That doesn't seem to go nicely hand in hand with the race to Mackinac or any of the weekend activities.
No, they're predicting right now, the models are kicking out 4-foot waves as the race begins. I can't remember. We've had groups of Mackinac racers come in here that we've briefed for decades, and it's fun to talk to these guys and women because they really know their weather and they watch it very closely. And I learn a lot from them, hearing about how they, you know, what sort of weather conditions they encounter. But I don't think I can remember as well-organized northerly winds developing. And, of course, they know how to maneuver. You know, that means they'll be going into the wind to go up the lake to Mackinac Island, and yet there are ways you position a sailboat that you can feed off the energy from those northerly winds that are coming into your face to keep going forward and heading right into the wind. It's amazing how they do that.
It's a serious race with extremely capable participants, but it just weather conditions like this always gets me a little nervous. Yeah. It just gets me a little nervous.
It does. Well, Anna, remember a couple years ago, those thunderstorms hit up by off Charlevoix, way up by Traverse City, and boy, there was one of those boats capsized in the middle of the night. Can you imagine
deadly
being
too, as I recall?
Can you imagine trying to find your colleagues, some of your colleagues who have been in a capsized vessel in the middle of a thunderstorm that's producing strobe light like lightning, 70-mile-an-hour wind gusts and blinding rains?
No.
And then the waves on top of it. So that
very tragic when that happened. So we have a risk of thunderstorms here and some heavy rains. Is this weekend? When is that moving in, Tom?
Well, the rains are coming now. They're into north central Illinois. They're eastbound, so we'll see scattered showers develop this evening. Then they'll become more numerous, and they'll come through in waves then tonight, tomorrow night. And this will be the biggest rain we've had in about 3 weeks around here. Wow. For as wet as summer's been, July's actually been dry. We've had less than a third our normal rain. So we're going to get more rain than we've had in any weather system since back on June 21st and 22nd when we had over 2.5 inches of rain. We'll probably have widespread 1 to 2 inch totals. The rains won't be continuous. They'll come in waves, and the backwash scattered showers will linger over the weekend, so they'll come and go too. So, you know,
how about the Cubs game, Tom? They play around 6:30 with the Cardinals.
Good point.
Disruption there with the rain.
You know, these showers are coming in, so there'll be a couple of showers. I'd bring some rain gear, Kevin. No question about it.
What about Rich and his beer? When is that going to happen?
Saturday
Tom?
Afternoon. Yeah. I'm a little worried. I'm out on my friend's boat. It's called Joint Custody. It's a nice little pleasure yacht.
It sounds fun. So,
yeah,
could go wrong.
I know. Imagine Richard out there bobbing around in 4 or 5 foot
waves. A lot of fun.
Do you get seasick, Richard?
No, I'm not. No, I actually do very well.
Good. Well, the
famous
winds
last words
won't be bad to start with. They'll be building during the day, and then by later in the day, the winds turn northerly enough that they're covering a good chunk of water and churning up some waves. So I suspect it won't be a very sanguine sail on Saturday night.
I just bark out lines from Clooney in A Perfect Storm and just ride that wave all the way home. Oh, he didn't make it. Spoiler alert.
And hope for one of those rogue waves doesn't hit. You
all
know?
Right. Well, okay.
Like the way that sounds. All right. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. Great talking to you.
Good
love
to talk to you, too. And happy Thursday. And Kevin, to you as well.
Thank you, Tom.
You bet, guys. See you later.
Once again, Tom Skilling brought to you by PermaSeal, PermaSeal Basement Systems. We're going to check in now, find out what's happening top of the hour in the news with Ryan Burrow.
Looking to donate to the victims of the Prospect Heights apartment fire. We've got details coming up.
Time to check traffic trouble spots with Violetta Podramatic. The dulcifluous tones of the NBC Nightly News cold open. I love hearing that. We have the man at the helm of the NBC Nightly News, Lester Holt, one of our favorite people, joining the show. Hi, Lester. Are you just back from Aspen recently? You were at the Aspen Security Forum, right?
Yeah, and I'm in Los Angeles today. Annual gathering of intelligence officials and top names, and but this year the timing, of course, fascinating given the post-Helsinki environment.
And you made a lot of news because you sat down with FBI Director Christopher Wray, and he had a lot to say. It's everyone's talking about, frankly, your interview today, other news organizations. You asked him about this offer. I want to get to a couple of things that you said in particular, but you did ask him about this offer for a joint probe of the Russian meddling. Remember this thing was was the post-summit offer to do that. What did he have to say about that, Lester?
Well, he wouldn't bite on the, you know, whether that was a good idea when I spoke specifically, but when I backed off and said the idea of such a thing, and he immediately dismissed that, and then I said, well, what about Americans being... you know, being interviewed, and he said that would be, I think originally he said that would be my least favorite interrogation technique, and he said that would even be worse, essentially. So dismissing the idea.
The idea that U.S. citizens would go to Russia to be interrogated or, I guess, interviewed or part of an investigation.
Well, both. The original offer from Putin, as I understood it, was that you can send your agents to Russia. We'll let you hear our interview with, you know, we'll ask the questions. And then it became more of a quid pro quo. You can interrogate them, but we want to come to the U.S. and interrogate some folks as well. So the fact that the White House didn't immediately dismiss it was a cause for alarm for some. But as far as Christopher Wray, you know, he didn't want to, I don't think he said the word Trump once. He didn't go out, you know, he didn't register the criticism he's gotten from the president, saying that they're keeping their head down and doing their job. But it was clear he draws lines. And one of those is that in intelligence is still sound on Russian hacking, and in his view, they're still at it, which is contradictory of what the president told us yesterday.
We have a little piece of audio from your sit-down with FBI Director Christopher Wray. Let's listen to that here.
Based on everything that's, and I'm talking about in the public realm, that we know about the Mueller investigation, the indictments that exist, is there anything that would allow it to be called a witch hunt?
I've been consistent. I get asked this a lot. Do not believe Special Counsel Mueller is on a witch hunt. I think it's a professional investigation conducted by a man that I've known to be a straight shooter. In all my interactions with him in my past life in government and certainly since then. So I don't think it's a witch hunt.
Hmm.
Yeah, he was very clear on it. But once again, he didn't want to reference anything not in the public realm, certainly, of the investigation. He honors that. But he's very clear that this is well within its scope.
Yeah. What do you think was the biggest moment there of your sit down when you learned something new today, Lester?
Well, I thought there were a couple of things. You know, I asked him about this push from the House to get more documents related to the Clinton and the Mueller investigation, and he said, "Like, I draw a line on sources and methods. We have to honor our foreign partners." So he got very, you know, defiant on that issue, that I'm not going to give that stuff up. And then later in that same part of the conversation, I said, "There are reports that you have, you wanted to resign." And he didn't deny it and simply said, you know, don't take this. I'm paraphrasing.
I think we have that clip, actually, Lester. I don't mean to interrupt you, but let's hear it actually right from Christopher Wray.
There have also been stories that you threatened to resign. Have you ever hit a point on that issue of sources and methods or anywhere else where you said, this is a line?
You know, I'm a, as I said, I'm a low-key, understated guy, but that should not be mistaken for what my spine is made out of.
So you have...
I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah, a little nervous laughter from people in the room, but I think the answer was very clear. What, you know, he obviously didn't deny it. So he, there's some issues that he feels strong enough about that he would walk away if he was asked to violate them.
Yeah, Lester, well, you do such a masterful job there, because sometimes what the subject doesn't say is much more powerful than anything they could say.
I think that's
right.
I'd say he's
a very passionate guy, and you know, we talked a little bit, you know, before we sat down for this, and just, you know, about how he deals with the criticism, and even in behind scenes, he wouldn't bite on the president specifically, and some things were said, but he really feels that, you know, he says, look, what I care about is how the people that use our services essentially deal with this, you know, the people who are trying to get their kidnapped child back, or, you know, have lost money in some fraud or what have you. And that's, he says, what keeps him coming to work every day. But, you know, I think you have to, even he will acknowledge it's not fun. It's not fun hearing some of the things that he's had to hear.
Yeah. Or the sort of what's happened within the FBI with its own people coming and giving congressional testimony. I think that can't be cozy. Did you talk about that at all? Or
we did. And we talked about the Inspector General report and, you know, the note that they've got some personnel issues, the stroke, who testified last week, and he had written the anti-Trump emails, and he acknowledged that, you know, these are personnel matters that are being held. He said, but, you know, he wants people to put it in perspective that these were a handful of people in a much larger organization, and there was no evidence that any bias affected how, you know, cases played out. But he's, you know, he, as he said at the outset when the report came out, you know, he takes a lot of it to heart, and you know that they're processing through it and you know, trying to see what they can learn from it.
Yeah, I'll bet. I'll bet. He says also that Russia did attempt to interfere with the last election, and you asked him about, are there ongoing efforts to this point, something the president was asked about yesterday and caused a stir because of that question by Cecilia Vega from ABC News, when it sounded like he was saying, no, they're not doing it anymore, and he meant to say, no, thank you, no more questions. However you want to read that, is it ongoing? You also asked Christopher Wray about Russia's current efforts to interfere with our democracy.
Yeah, I asked that specifically because of the president's answer and how the White House had tried to back it up. And my understanding from reporters in the room, it was very clear, and looking at the tape, it was very clear that he was giving a no answer. And so I thought it was important to hear from, you know, this, you know, top law enforcement official about that, who firmly believes that they continue active measures to kind of undermine, you know, public dialogue and the process.
Mm-hmm. News this afternoon, CNN's been reporting the president plans to have Putin Summit 2 in D.C., that it seemed maybe a redo might be in order. This was surprising to the director of national intelligence, Dan Coats, who says he was unaware of it. I know your Andrea Mitchell sat down with Dan Coats as well. That's something else we'll see on the NBC Nightly News.
Yeah, that news was breaking as they were talking, and it was news to him. And it came down just a short while ago that they're going to, at least the invitation has gone up for a fall meeting. There's no specific date, but the idea that Putin would come to the White House. So the question is, you know, is that a continuation of a larger discussion, or as some may suggest, it's kind of a do-over in hopes of the president being able to put on a more forceful face on this issue.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. And anything else from Andrea Mitchell's piece you want to promote for us or tell us about, Lester, in advance of the news tonight?
She's, you know, I haven't seen all of their interview, but there were some fascinating passages in there about just the danger of a cyber 9/11 and what that would look like. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a very fascinating part of their conversation, and we'll have more of that as well.
He certainly seems, Dan Coats, have no problem pushing back hard on the president.
Sure,
and
yeah,
some of his claims from this week, he issued that statement pretty quickly after the Russian summit, saying, no, they absolutely are meddling. And, you know, he is a Trump appointee. So that was, he's showing his strength there and the power. But we'll be watching for that interview tonight on the NBC Nightly News. Lester Holt, thank you. Always
right.
Good to talk with you.
Great talking to you both. Take care.
Thanks, Lester.
Hey, check it out. 100 events in just 19 days. One epic food festival. Visit ctfoodbowl.com. That's ctfoodbowl.com for the ultimate Chicago food experience this August.
Yeah.
Want to talk about the ESPYs in just a second, but also we were mentioning Chance the Rapper bought the Chicagoist, so he's Chance the Publisher now. And Vanity Fair, everyone was a little taken aback by their take, their headline today.
That's exactly
but they,
right.
They changed it.
Yeah, Anna, you mentioned this just at the top of the show. Chance the Rapper saves Chicago journalism. That's the headline they went with. Chance the Savior. A lot of Chicago journalists were jumping in on Twitter saying, look, you know, this is a good thing. Maybe we'll wait and see. But there are a lot of people already doing this. So now they've changed their headline, to their credit. I give them credit for this.
Uh-huh.
It went from Chance the Rapper saves Chicago journalism to Chance the Rapper steps up for Chicago journalism.
Better. Thank you, Vanity Fair.
That's more accurate.
We like that.
Thank you, Vanity Fair.
So we saw the ESPYs last night, or maybe I saw the clips of it. I didn't watch the whole thing. Danica Patrick, a local girl. We love her.
Yeah.
Woman, I should say.
Well, she's a Packer fan now, so.
Well, you know what? Maybe we don't like her anymore. That's right.
That's okay.
She's dating Aaron Rodgers. I think she might be a secret spy, though, hopefully, for the Bears. Is that possible? Do you think? Because she's been a Bears fan her whole life. I don't understand how that works.
Dates there are a lot of theories when Rodgers was dating Olivia Munn that he didn't have his eye on the prize, you know.
You're right.
Wasn't on the field 100%.
Now
maybe
she's
Danica.
She's the Illinois spy, you think?
Spies are big these days, so maybe she's
never know.
And maybe the Bears are utilizing
Here's a little clip of her at the ESPYs last night.
We all have bad news. Speaking of, Tiger Woods is back. Sort of, I guess. I mean, you know, why do people keep talking about this guy when he isn't winning? Who does he think he is? Me?
Well, you could just see the joke writer's fingerprints all over it. She tried, but
she did. That's a hard thing to do when you're not a comedian. You're a race car driver.
As a comedian, she's a very, very good race car driver.
The Twitterverse was not happy with her performance last night, and I do not envy that position to be hosting a show with athletes too.
Yeah, you know, in the past they've had some really good comics who are also huge sports fans, and that might be the way to go. Maybe have her kind of be a co-host.
We have one more clip here, Richard.
Okay.
So many big NBA moves this offseason. Kawhi Leonard went to the Raptors. Dwight Howard went to the Wizards.
and Ben Simmons went to the Kardashians.
Yeah.
I lost that one, Violetta. Is Ben Simmons dating a Kardashian?
Yeah, explain that one, Violetta. She's not there. Our Kardashian expert.
We need a reality star, yeah.
Well, he'll points per game and rebounds will be way down in season two. yeah, you know, you just it's tough. And, you know, you give her points for trying, but, you know, she did some costume numbers. Uh-huh. That was a little
there were a lot of stone-faced looks on the athletes' faces and some awkward silences and that kind of thing.
The ESPYs are awkward in general. I mean, it's a bunch of athletes getting awards they've already gotten awards for.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's
the best player out there who already won an MVP a couple months ago. The best stuff they do are the
And they
the
tell
heart.
Everybody who they know if they've won, because you notice, like, there's never any surprise, and the winners are always in an aisle seat in the first three rows. You know, Academy Awards, every once in a while, like, oh my gosh, it's an upset. She's in the bathroom, and they come running in. The ESPYs, it's like, oh yeah, you guys are tweeting, you know, hey, you'll be surprised. I'm up for best play. The guy that ran through the center field wall, caught a falling baby from a building, and then made the catch and threw it home.
Can you guys believe it? I might get an ESPY.
I still haven't forgiven the ESPYs for giving Aaron Rodgers the quarterback, the best quarterback of the year, over Tom Brady the year he had that miraculous comeback in, robbed. But the real moment, the most powerful moment of the ESPYs last night was the last few minutes when you saw Allie Raisman and 141 women who stood on that stage. Brave women who all impacted by Team USA doctor Larry Nassar. And his longtime
Michigan State doctor. Remember, a lot of those were Michigan State victims,
absolutely,
too.
Yeah.
That's right. And you know, you saw the power in numbers and just seeing that powerful image, how many lives he's impacted. And it wasn't even all of them. It was 141 of it, 200 or more. We have a little bit of sound from that as well. Listen to it.
Too often, abusers and enablers perpetuate suffering by making survivors feel that their truth doesn't matter. To all the survivors out there, don't let anyone rewrite your story. Your truth does matter. You matter. And you are not alone.
Allie Raisman there, who was speaking for many of those women on that stage. Just a powerful moment. They presented all of them with the Arthur Ashe Courage Award. And it really, I just thought it was a fitting
remarkable. And you feel like if even one young person at home who's going through this, you know, horrible hell, hears those words and turns to a mom or a dad or any kind of adult figure and gets some help, it's great. It was very powerful. And, you know, we've been talking about news gathering and everything. There were some newspaper reporters, including at the Indianapolis Star, who were on this story for a year before everybody really picked up on it. And actually talked to some of the first. It was Rachel Denhollander, who was the first gymnast who spoke up. But, you know, that's, again, we talk about the
power of good journalism.
Think about Penn State.
That's right.
Same thing. Yeah.
How was that originally exposed?
It was a local reporter.
Yeah.
Kevin's exactly right. Yeah. It was a woman who was working for the local newspaper.
Little local paper there, yeah.
Who had that story for 6 months before anybody
reacted to it. And no one wanted to believe it.
Yeah, exactly. People don't want to believe it. I understand that. But for those women to stand on that stage, that was a visual, you know.
It really
and we
was.
Talked about the crowd being a little jaded and kind of, you know, not involved, but man, they were riveted by everyone.
Their eyes were open. Everyone's were to see that. I mean, you heard the victim impact statements during the trial, and those were powerful, but to see those women together up there, it, as you said, Richard, I'm sure it could be inspirational and motivational to some women who may be going through similar situations. We have to break here in 2 minutes. We've got Ryan's news, and then coming up, we have Sergeant Pete Kokonis, our favorite cop here on the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVellantis, then a top five at five you won't believe, and then we're going to talk about how drivers may be able to get a piece of a new lawsuit with some tickets that were given out to hundreds of thousands of drivers who may have overpaid a bit. We'll talk about that coming up. This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVellantis. Richard Roper here with us today as Ro is having a procedure today. Procedure.
A pretty serious procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Very personal, too.
It's having his plumbing checked, and we hope everything checks out. Ro Strong. You know he's going to do well.
That is Ro Strong. That actually is Strong, not just Ro Strong.
Wow.
That is Strong, but he's out for it. So we just said, you know, you're under anesthesia, and if you feel like you need to call into the show, call into the show. And he said, no, I won't be, and we'll see. We'll see. We have with us here, do we want him to call in?
No. Do you think like when the staff comes in, like he's like, welcome aboard, you people?
This is the
show. The problem is Rogan's very graphic with medical discussions. Well,
he likes to self-diagnose. And then his consultations, he's like, he takes a look at the x-ray, holds it up to the light. Yeah, that's an x-ray. All right. Yep.
So we hope he's okay, and we're praying for him. Roe strong. We know that we'll see him back here tomorrow, so it'll all be fine. But that's not why we call. What we're talking about here is the police shooting recently that has attracted so much attention in the city and actually nationwide. I saw a BBC story about it today. 37-year-old black man, Harith Augustus, who went by the name of Snoop, was killed in a confrontation with police. He's a man who didn't have a criminal record. He was, in some minor offenses, I believe, in his background, but over a decade ago, and he had a gun. We want to talk about police procedures and how police handle these, and we have Sergeant Pete Kokonis with us, 38 years, a Chicago police officer. Pete, you worked in high crime areas putting away bad guys, and you also worked in internal affairs where you put away a few police officers who were not doing what they should do. And I think you have a unique perspective in this these types of situations. You certainly understand policy. And talk about this case, because you saw the community protesting outside the mayor's house today. Actually, we have a little bit of audio on that here. Let's listen.
No justice, no peace. No racist police. No justice, no peace.
That's outside Mayor Rahm Emanuel's Northside home today. People are angry over this one. And I want to talk. Tell us what you saw here in that situation, because a lot of people say he had a gun. What happened?
Well, when his incident was
after the protest on the Dan Ryan, they asked for more protection on 71st Street. So the superintendent gives them that. They give them walking posts to alleviate crime or help alleviate crime in that area. So these officers are doing their due diligence. They're walking down the street. They see this man. He's standing there. I don't know whether he's selling singles or not. It's immaterial. And one of the officers noticed a bulge under his shirt. And when they walked over to him and they started questioning him, unfortunately, the mic doesn't kick in when the cop double taps the mic. It takes 30 seconds for the audio to catch up with the video. He goes for his wallet, and he's pulling out whatever card. Now, if he's telling them, I have a concealed carry permit or anything, the concealed carry permits, the law requires you, when you're stopped by the police in a car or in foot, you're supposed to tell the officer, put your hands up and say, I have a weapon on me. I have a concealed carry permit. So the officer now knows that you have a gun. And most people, when they're confronted like that, would say that. But this man, he's reaching for his wallet, and there's speculation that he has an FOID card, which means nothing. It just means you can buy a gun.
Mm-hmm. So you're allowed to have a gun, but you're not allowed to carry it on you.
Right.
And police received some sort of, how did they find out he had a gun? Because that's one of the things people are pushing back on, saying, well, he exhibited characteristics of an armed person. It was showing through his shirt. Is that what they saw?
Mm-hmm. Right. And then he was being evasive. And there's different degrees in the paradigm of, a resister. And, you'd be a passive resister and say, I have a gun. Or you become an active resister. It appeared that the woman officer was reaching for his arm because it was right by where the suspect gun was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when she did that and another officer approached him on the left side, he decided to break away and run. And then he turns and he makes a motion that looks like to a police officer in a matter of a second that he's going to go and grab his gun. Now, the superintendent was great in putting this out right away.
They're
to
absolutely
stop the lies.
Uncharacteristic speed, but it changed the narrative entirely.
Right. They were saying he was shot in the back and that people were saying he had a concealed carry permit. He had none of those things. And unfortunately, this man turned, made a move that would make me feel that I was in danger, and one of the officers fired. Now, originally, all they said it was a police woman that shot him. It was a police man that shot him. So people that aren't shooting scenes that I've been on, people say they've saw this, they did that, and then when you question them, well, I heard this, and my friend saw this, and I heard it. I was around the corner. So this man made a bad decision, and that bad decision cost him his life. No policeman that I know of walks out of their home at night, and in their mind they're thinking, I'm going to shoot and kill somebody today.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Pete, you raise a lot of good points, and people see what they want to see even when they do see the video. But obviously, I'm sure your advice would be for anybody in any situation like that. You don't engage in an argument or a confrontation. You don't escalate. Answer the questions. Be forthcoming. Let them know. And follow the instructions of the officer in that situation.
When I'm driving my car and I get stopped for speeding, which is a very rare instance.
Probably
on the way to the studio.
Yeah, radar gun malfunctioning, probably.
I'm stopped in another county, mm-hmm. or I'm stopped on the way up to where I play golf, and the policeman walks up. I tell him immediately, I said, listen, I'm a retired officer. I have a gun in my car, mm-hmm. and I keep my hands on the steering wheel. And then he comes up and he talks to me. I show him the identification, mm-hmm. and he has a choice. He can write me a ticket, or he, says, don't do that again, and away I go.
Mm-hmm. You've seen the columnists, you've seen the activists, and the ones, I'm sure, outside the mayor's house right now. They're saying carrying a weapon in a high-crime neighborhood is not unusual, and it's not unusual to maybe not necessarily have the concealed carry because people do that for protection, and should that alone be enough to stop a guy? Is it?
Oh, absolutely. Or a woman? Nobody should be carrying a gun.
You have to have a concealed carry.
If you have a concealed carry, that's fine. You've gone through all the courses. You've gone through the background check. You're supposed to be a reasonable gun owner. You're not supposed to be a person. This guy worked in a barbershop. So all the people that he dealt with, did they all know that this guy had an automatic weapon and two magazines on his hip? He had the ability to shoot 30 rounds? Did the people in the neighborhood know that? If they did, why didn't they say something? Don't ask the superintendent. Say, Superintendent Johnson, I want you to give us more protection, which the alderman and Flager and everybody said on 71st Street. Then take the protection for the business owners and the people, and then turn around and say, well, don't just stop somebody because they have a gun. I'm not going to want to walk around where people have guns.
Illegal guns in particular.
Absolutely.
And your point is that the community asked for more street patrols. They wanted more cops walking the streets and the beat to try to keep an eye on things that might happen in a high crime area, the South Shore neighborhood.
And police, I read, some police and a lot of citizens, they criticized Johnson for closing down the Ryan, those four lanes of the Ryan. But here's a guy in a situation where there's thousands of people out there. They're led by this radical priest and some other people from BLM and all these other organizations, Antifa and whomever. And Johnson makes a decision, says, listen, if we don't open up these four lanes, there's a chance that my officers can get hurt or other people can get hurt. So he goes to the state police, this Leo Schmitz, and says, listen, close it down for a little while, let these people walk, and then let them walk off the expressway. Why have an instant where something could happen?
I thought it was handled, given the circumstances, handled quite well, and Governor Rauner didn't help by calling it chaos in the middle of the day. But, we saw actually a lot of great videos where some of the marchers were fist-bumping the cops, and everybody was, that could have escalated. You're absolutely right, Pete. And it got a lot of coverage, but what you saw were peaceful citizens, and you could argue with the method if you want, but you saw peaceful citizens protesting, and police basically protecting them by forming that line there and letting and not engaging, not escalating, and not instigating.
I concerned, and I've mentioned this to Anna before. Mm-hmm. Father Flager, he has demonstrations where when there's news people around and it's in the morning or it's in the evening. We went to a thing for a Chance the Rapper where Anna said to me, do you think Father Flager will be around? I said, turn on the camera. He'll be there in 5 minutes.
Well, he's good at attracting attention to the cause.
Why not? Here, my question
and
is
that,
this.
Some of that's very important, I have
right.
to say.
you know, this Chance the Rapper, he's, I don't know, I know nothing about rap music. I don't
Shocking.
Get it.
I can't believe that.
I mean, I just don't get it. But this guy's a class act. He's doing everything right. He's nonviolent. His music lyrics are maybe, you know, X-rated and stuff like that. But here's a guy that actually cares, that actually is putting money out
Absolutely.
There.
He certainly is.
His money is where
Millions
his mouth
of dollars.
Is.
Millions
if you're going to march and demonstrate against killings, you know, a week ago Monday, you had 21 people shot on a Monday and four died. Why don't you march at 1, 2, 3, or 4 in the morning on the streets where the most crime is? Father, get out there and march then.
Well, their point is they're trying to engage people who it doesn't directly influence to realize that this is a citywide, countywide, statewide problem and that we all need to care about violence in our
it's
city.
Nationwide.
Nationwide, true. But we have a real problem,
kids are
I think
killing
we can
kids.
Admit here. I want to ask you about the audio piece of this because I think that is one of the things you continually hear when you're watching the news and the people who are upset with what had happened here. They say, well, the fact that the body cam audio wasn't working, wasn't released, they feel is some type of a cover-up. But I want to ask you, when you look at that video alone, knowing that, you know, COPA, the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, still has to determine
right.
what happened here and whether the officer was in the right, and they will make that determination. But from what you can see from your experience, is there any audio that would change this officer's ability to fear for their life or feeling
no.
that they were fearing
no.
for their life no. in that situation?
No. Once this man becomes an active resistor, once he breaks away, once he runs, once he turns, once he shows all the paradigms and all the graphs and all the training that you have, nothing says that I have to wait until you draw before I shoot. I mean,
when they touch a gun,
I'm not going to wait till you draw. I mean, because police shootings are between 8 and 12 feet, and more often than not, nobody gets hit, you know. And I mentioned to you last week, there was a roll call where a woman was, the weapons
police
inspection
officer.
Is on Wednesdays, and I go through and I check your weapons, make sure that they're not dirty, that they function and everything. And they came upon this officer, and they said, your gun isn't loaded. And she goes, no. And they asked why. She says, I don't want to have to shoot anybody, so I don't carry a loaded weapon.
Wow.
Okay, number one, you're in the wrong business.
Right.
But
that,
number two,
incredible.
If I'm a policeman at that roll call, and I've worked with this person a few days.
Wow, can you imagine?
What happens if somebody comes after me, shoots me,
and your
and
partner
you don't
there.
Have you don't have a loaded gun?
That's insane.
It is.
It's, you know, the woman that took a beating a couple of years ago, she says, I was afraid to shoot because of the notoriety for my family and what would happen. And they showed she
that video
took a
was
vicious
horrible.
Beating.
Her head, as I remember,
beating.
Was
horrible,
smashed yeah. against the pavement
so,
and she really suffered
you know,
a lot of injury.
If a policeman hesitates, you know, it's wrong. And to have the Department of Justice, the FBI, Antifa, to have BLM, to have all these people want you to do all this stuff. I mean, how much paperwork can a policeman do? You know, when he steps out of his car and talks to somebody, he's got to do a report. And now they want, if he steps out of his car and pulls his weapon, they want to do a report. You can only taser a guy so many times. You know, sometimes those tasers don't work. Mm-hmm. You know, you wear a coat, that taser is useless.
Mm. Right, wintertime.
So how much, you know, you're going to take, you know, but another thing was that people were saying, well, you should disarm the police. Well, then who is going to answer the calls for help?
Right, and we have a lot of guns on our streets. It doesn't seems like that is the weapon of choice for sure. I want to ask you though, they changed the use of force policy for the Chicago Police Department was amended last year, and it was amended, I believe, in the wake of the Laquan McDonald shooting.
Yes.
That they took a hard look at many things that Chicago police were doing, and one of the things was they added concern for human life to that policy. So how does that differentiate how an officer acts on a scene now versus then? Is it just more training? What happened there?
But I think they train the officers better. When I was a young policeman, I mean, we had a guy shooting at somebody and we were standing on the other side. So you really basically the officer has to understand that, you know, there's cops on the other coming Jeez. This way. Yeah. Why would I be shooting that way? And it's all, you know, a policeman's duty is to preserve life and to preserve and to protect property. Mm-hmm. Those are the basic tenets of being a police officer anywhere in the world or in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And if you limit my ability to enforce the laws that you pass mm-hmm. because of a minor, now I can't say minor because somebody died, but the number of police shootings, I saw this, that were out of 996 police shootings, 0.0004 were an unarmed person. Out of 996 mm-hmm. police shootings.
And you understand why those would get the most attention, because they seem like the ones that are...
Well, of course, you're going to play
the scrutiny is real in some very small percentage.
From the police, and he gets and they shoot him. And, you know, the policeman made a mistake.
Right.
I mean, it's an error.
Well, we know the vast majority, overwhelming majority of police officers are running into danger, and when others are running out, and they're there to protect us. And there is healing to do in our city. We've got to come together.
Communication. You know, in my day, you could talk to people. But these cops now, they go from job to job to job to job to job to job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard for them to sit and spend a little time and talk to people in the community. They have CAPS meetings. They do hot dog things. They do stuff at the beach. They if you live in a community and there's murders and you know that these people are gangbangers, sell drugs, and have guns, mm-hmm. and you don't report it, I don't have sympathy for you when you say when your little Johnny gets shot that, everybody should drop their guns.
Sergeant Pete, we always appreciate your perspective. Thanks for coming on the show, and we'll see you soon. Did we pay for your parking today?
No.
No, sorry. We'll try to get on that.
See you next time, Pete.
Okay, yeah, thanks. All right. He's waiting for his MyPillow, he said.
Keep listening after 5:30 for your chance to win a family four-pack of passes to the 11th Annual Blackhawks Convention. That's at the Hilton Chicago, July 27th through the 29th, courtesy of Mathnasium, changing lives through math. Get convention passes at ChicagoBlackhawks.com.
The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 7:20 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Townstone Financial. Here's Ryan Burrow.
The Steve Cochran Show has free Blackhawks convention passes for you tomorrow at 7:20 a.m. Tune in.
Yes.
I'm telling you.
You better. Richard Roper, that is going to be all over you if you don't.
Right.
This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantes. Ro is having a procedure done, and I'm sure he'll tell you all about that tomorrow. He's being very Ro strong, and we are praying for him to get through.
I bet radio guy's keeping him company.
Oh, gosh, you can only imagine.
He might be doing the procedure.
I wonder if he'll turn into a radio guy after the procedure when he's on the anesthesia. You know, some parts of your personality just start coming out of nowhere.
We're going to catch you down with a little Susu Studio from Vic Callen.
I shouldn't say coming out of nowhere.
Could you imagine all the different voices after he's on that?
Oh, my gosh.
Is he schizophrenic? What's with this guy?
There's a really weird one in the waiting
room. Fake tubes. These are fake tubes.
He starts doing John Fox all of a sudden. No one knows what the heck's going on.
Did we affect his vocal cords during the surgery?
What if it's like, you know, sometimes people have a trauma and all of a sudden they can speak, you know, in a different language? And what if he comes out and he only can talk like one of his
radio
characters?
Like Johnny Depp. Hey, nurse, coming up.
No, Johnny Depp. Can you imagine? People listening.
Stay
going,
close,
what
nurse.
Is happening?
I hope that doesn't happen.
Permanent reverb on his voice.
Oh, we pulled the wrong cord.
Well, we hope he's okay, and we're all
we're thinking about you, buddy.
Thinking about you, Ro. See you tomorrow. But right now, we've got to get some important things, and it is time, that special time of day, the thing we do every day, every time, at this time of day is what I meant to say.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Okay. Checking in at...
Number five.
President Trump told CBS News that Joe Biden is his dream opponent in the 2020 election. in his interview with Jeff Glor, the principal anchor of CBS News, he asked the president who he thinks his opponent will be on the Democratic side, noting Biden, the former vice president, has said he will decide whether he's going to be running come January.
Who do you think your Democratic opponent will be? Joe Biden says he'll make a decision by January.
Well, I dream about Biden. That's a dream. Look, Joe Biden ran three times. He never got more than 1%. And President Obama took him out of the garbage heap, and everybody was shocked that he did. I'd love to have it be Biden. I think I'd like to have any one of those people that we're talking about. You know, there's probably the group of seven or eight right now. I'd like to run against any one of them. But Biden never by himself could never do anything.
You know what? He's right. He will beat any of the candidates who are being mentioned right now.
Yeah, it's
I would
difficult.
Not bet against him. I'm not saying I want that to happen, but yeah. He would win. He would beat Joe Biden.
It is difficult because the Democrats are also, the Republicans are certainly a mess right now, trying to decide who's pro-Trump, who's on board entirely, who's not. But then you look at the Democrats, and it seems like there's this pull to the very progressive far left side, and you wonder how that plays across the country. And
I'll take on Kleber Lang, Ivan Drago. Apollo Creed, any of them. Tommy Gunn.
Didn't Biden challenge him to a fight in the schoolyard?
Yes,
beat him up or something?
Take him back behind the woodshed.
Could get ugly. Could be interesting. We have one more clip here. Let's listen in here to this. Oh, sorry, I have a setup first. Then in an interview with CNBC, he said that he will be Russian President Vladimir Putin's worst enemy if the relationship and their deal-making doesn't work out, unlike President Barack Obama, who he called Putin's patsy.
Look at the sanctions I've put on. Look at the diplomats I threw out. Look at all of the things that I've done. Nobody else did what I've done. Obama didn't do it. Obama was a patsy for Russia. He was a total patsy. Look at the statement he made where he thought the mics were turned off, okay? The stupid statement he made. Nobody does a big deal about that. Getting along with President Putin, getting along with Russia is a positive, not a negative. All right. Now, with that being said, if that doesn't work out, I'll be the worst enemy he's ever had. The worst he's ever had.
Okay.
It's announced today that there's going to be Trump-Putin Summit 2 in D.C. Could be a continuation of their talks, or it could be a redo, given the reception, of course, of the first summit back here at home. He's inviting Putin back to Washington to talk to him again.
Putin 2, Electric Boogaloo. That should be fantastic.
I don't know if it's a closed door meeting or what, but we'll have details on that.
That interpreter. I think I'm going to call in that week. I'm not going. She'll call in both languages. I'm not coming.
It's going to be a very rough day whenever that happens, man. But we will let you know about it because that's our job. Checking in at
number four.
Fox News host, former judge Jeanine Pirro in the news, appearing on The View, promoting her new book, Liars, Leakers, and Liberals, The Case Against the Anti-Trump Conspiracy. Alliterative, I like that. Two-segment interview covered a variety of topics that were all Donald Trump. At one point, after returning from the break, and in response to a question from co-host Sarah Haynes on why she wrote the book, Pirro answered that it was because of her experience with the criminal justice system.
Well, I wrote the book because I'm not an ideologue. I mean, I have been in the crime business for over three decades, and I think I said that before. And I know a con when I see it. And I think that what has happened in the last...
I don't think she expected that. It was not supposed to be a laugh line.
No,
but they were like, really?
It wasn't because of her cozy relationship with the president. I think some people saw some irony in that statement.
Good studio audience. I like that.
It really was. It's, you know, listen to this. Then at one point that seemed to tank the entire segment once and for all, Pirro accused Whoopi Goldberg of having Trump derangement syndrome.
Did you just point at me?
Yes.
Listen, I don't have Trump derangement. Let me tell you what I have.
Okay.
I have a lot of... I'm tired of people starting a conversation with Mexicans or liars and rapists. I'm tired of people starting a conversation about this country. Listen, I'm 62 years old. There have been a lot of people in office that I didn't agree with, but I have never, ever... seen anything like this. Clearly you don't watch the show, so you don't know that I don't suffer from that. What I suffer from is the inability to figure out how to fix this.
Ooh.
Wow. Good for Whoopi. And I hear you after the taping or after the show, they said, have you had lunch? Because it just got handed to you.
Page Six has a full rundown of the, it didn't end there. We have a bonus cut, and then I'll tell you what Page Six is reporting.
One of the things that you talk about a lot, and I'm curious about it, is the deep state. How long has the deep state been there, and who's running it?
Well, I want to answer your question because you gave
your
opening statement, which was how horrible it is that Donald Trump is talking about all of these people.
I'm sorry, you know that's what you
horrible?
Said. You said,
Whoopi, you know
you
what's
said
horrible?
That
when
it was,
people
it's
shouldn't
okay.
be here end it's, up murdering the children of American citizens.
You know what's horrible?
What's
when,
horrible
when the president of the United States whips up
cities.
People to beat the hell out of people?
No.
Say goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Take that. Well, apparently afterwards, Page Six is reporting they got into an argument backstage at The View. It poured over, and then they got even more heated with some bad words said in each direction. So I think they both need to chill out just a little bit. We're going to take a break here, but we'll have your three, your two, and your one coming up. But we're going to check in with Ryan Burrow, see what's coming up. Bottom of the hour on the WGN News.
And we continue to follow reports of damage due to tornadoes in central Iowa. More on that coming up at, let's go 5:30 from the WGN Radio Newsroom.
Time for traffic trouble spots. Here is Violetta Padromatic.
This week, the Chicago's best team is bringing you some of your favorite summer foods. We're talking about burgers, ice cream, and much, much more. That's on Chicago's Best this Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
All right, we're in the middle of the top five at five here on The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Richard Roper in with us today. And we are at
number three.
That's where we are. After an even par 71 at the first round of the British Open left him tied for 32nd, Tiger Woods spoke to reporters, and he said he felt like he played better than his score, and he could have been even higher on the leaderboard.
I played better than what the score indicates because I had 2 8-irons into both par fives today, and I end up with par on both of those. You know, if I just clean up those two holes and play them the way I'm supposed to play them, and with 8-iron in my hand, I think I probably have the best round and afternoon wave. Certainly could have been a little bit better.
Tiger, he's back. It was too sunny for me. When I watched the British Open or the Open
right?
Champions, I want rain, I want gray skies, I want windy, I want
that's
these guys
true.
Throwing like jackets on. But it's
that
good.
London foggy kind of weather.
You do, exactly. That's true. You feel like you want to see like you know some of the characters from Game of Thrones in the background on their horses.
That
right?
or Sherlock
right.
Holmes with the
or
big
Sherlock,
pipe and
yes.
the tweed going on or something in the Wellingtons or something.
Well, they're playing at historic Carnoustie, which is like the birthplace of golf essentially in Scotland. So I believe
invented golf. You're wrong, Kevin. They didn't even use clubs. They just
so
throw
wrong.
The ball.
Fake news.
There is rain in the forecast there, thankfully, because
yeah,
I like to see those sorts of.
That great,
it's like, what's all this sun? They need sunscreen. That shouldn't be warranted at the British Open. So a good start for Tiger, though, I think.
Good. Okay. Glad to hear that. I want to see him back. He's a fun golfer to watch. Let's checking in at, where are we? Right there.
Number two.
Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight turns 10 years old today. Here's a clip of the late Heath Ledger's Oscar-winning performance as the Joker facing off with Christian Bale's Batman.
Where's Dent?
Those mob fools want you gone so they can get back to the way things were. But I know the truth. There's no going back. You've changed things. Forever.
Then why do you want to kill me?
I don't want to kill you. What would I do without you? Go back to ripping off mob dealers? No, no. No. No, you complete me.
It's amazing.
It's haunting, his performance.
I mean, they just announced that there's going to be a Joker Origins movie next year. Joaquin Phoenix playing the Joker.
I like that,
Cass. He's a great actor, too, and Jared Leto has tried it, and Mark Hamill's voiced him, but I'll tell you, Heath Ledger, that's the Joker right there. And that was a great film by Christopher Nolan, one of the best. You know, that was one of the first that really took the superhero. You know, they had Iron Man and Spider-Man and all that. They're a lot of fun, but that was it was a heavy, solid drama, you know, that just happened to have superhero in it, you know, and it's a great film. And a lot of it basically here in Chicago. filmed here in Chicago. Remember when they were doing all the cool stuff on Lower Wacker Drive? If you haven't had a chance to see that, well, go back and watch that first Dark Knight 10 years ago.
Think about it. He was 28 when he died. And he just thought about what he had achieved in that short time and how excited you were about.
Sad story.
It is. It really is.
But I'll tell you a quick Christopher Nolan story. Okay. So he comes to Chicago for a giant premiere at Navy Pier in the IMAX. They brought some of the Batmobiles and all that stuff. Christopher Nolan, he actually lived some time here. And growing up, he went back and forth between England and Evanston because, he and his brother, there you go, Kev. And I had a date with me at the time. And Christopher Nolan, the director of The Dark Knight, comes over. And, you know, he's kind of mostly British. And he's kind of, you know, very dignified. Always is always wearing, you know, the ascot and everything. And he for about 5 minutes, told her how much he loved my criticism and my writing. And I was the greatest and everything. And he called me the next day and he said, I'll clean up. He said, did you have a lucky evening? Because if you didn't get a lucky evening after the Dark Knight, director talked you up, pal. I can't close any deals
for
you.
He called to say you're welcome, Richard.
Basically.
He's like, what are you going to do for me, Rich?
Yeah. I had to break it to him. I had explained to him that
she didn't know.
She didn't speak a lot of English.
Oh. Well, not everyone would know him. I mean, I love him. But
it was actually, I mean, he did it in a nice way. He's a brilliant filmmaker and a real student of film, too. So, great guy to talk to. Great.
Everything.
Dark Knight.
I love everything.
Christian Bale is the Dark Knight.
Boy, oh boy. Okay, checking in at
number one.
Good morning, Vietnam. It's just a smidgen past 6:05, and here we go with another day's version of the Dawn Buster Show from Armed Forces Radio. I'm Airman Adrian Kronauer, and for the next 4 hours, we've got the best.
You know that voice, Adrian Joseph Kronauer, the Air Force DJ who inspired the iconic film Good Morning Vietnam. He has died. The former U.S. Air Force sergeant served as a DJ and host of Dawn Buster, the radio show from 1965, 1966 in Saigon, where he used the signature line. You just heard it. Good morning, Vietnam. It wasn't until 1979 when he moved to New York that he co-wrote the original story for the famous movie, which earned Williams an Oscar nomination and a Golden Globe Award.
Good morning, Vietnam! Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early. Speaking of early, how about that Cro-Magnon Marty Drywitz? Thank you, Marty, for silky smooth sound. Make me sound like Peggy Lee.
I wonder if any of that was scripted, because Robin Williams is so brilliant off the cuff.
He is, but, you know, it's interesting, Anna, though, because when you played the original clip, because people are like, oh, he probably went over the top, but Adrian Kronauer's actual delivery was like that. And he had actually, Adrian Kronauer was a sergeant in the Air Force and served and really was that kind of a DJ. And he originally conceived it as a TV show. He thought it could be like a cool show like MASH, but then eventually it became a film, and Robin was nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah.
Adrian was a great storyteller in his own right, though, and I've had a chance to meet him many, many years ago, and just a really cool guy, and he loved what they did with that movie and how they told that story.
That's always cool to hear, because you never know.
Yeah.
Adrian Kronauer was 79.
The Top 5 at 5.
All right, keep listening right now, because very soon you're going to have a chance to win a family four-pack of passes to the 11th Annual Blackhawks Convention. That's at the Hilton, Chicago, July 27th through the 29th, courtesy of Mathnasium, changing lives through math. Get convention passes at chicagoblackhawks.com.
And very soon we'll be soliciting for Newsaroos, because we are playing your favorite game today, Richard Roper. I know you enjoy the Newsaroos. Rokan off today. He's got a procedure that he'll be telling you about tomorrow.
Okay.
And so we're being real strong for him, and we wish him the best, and we know he'll be okay.
Absolutely.
But right now we have to, so we think. And so right now, though, we want to turn to a story that might directly impact you. Hundreds of thousands of Chicago drivers may be getting some money back as part of a new lawsuit. Not class action status yet. Listen up, okay, traffic reporter, Violetta Podramedic. Those little minor traffic violations you have solicited some major fines over the year, and it might have just been illegal. Let's talk to the lawyer who is filing this suit, J.C. Zolna, the principal attorney at Myron M. Cherry & Associates. JC, what's this all about?
Well, the suit is all about a good deal of the minor parking and banning the compliance violations issued by the city of Chicago. And most Chicagoans are probably familiar with the administrative court system that the city operates. And there was a law passed decades ago allowing the city to administer these type of minor violations through the administrative courts, which obviously has less protections for the motorists. There's no rules of evidence. You don't have the right to cross-examine the witness. The rules are relaxed. So,
if I'm not wrong, that was a deal the Illinois General Assembly cut in exchange for establishing this $250 ceiling, and that would include all fines and late fees for your ticket. So even if it doubles and you pay it late and you got to pay fines and a late fee, you can't pay more than $250?
That's absolutely correct. There was a trade-off when this law was passed that if we're going to take away some of the protections that are typically afforded in a regular court, we're going to cap the amount of fines that and penalties that the city can impose on people so to ensure that only minor violations with minor fine and penalties are administered through this process. It turns out, over time, you know, the city just couldn't help themselves. They keep increasing their fines every time they need money, to a point where, for the past several years now, there's more than a dozen violations that exceed this cap.
Now, you're the firm who was behind the red light camera refunds, and nearly $40 million was given back to drivers when you found that the rules weren't necessarily followed in that case. They didn't send the second notice before the fines doubled, as I recall, and 400,000 people were awarded some money back. Do you expect that kind of an outcome here?
I do, and I think the bigger story here is the newest suit is just part of a bigger systemic problem with the city's municipal fine structure, because this is actually the third lawsuit that we've now filed. The first one was the red light camera program that they were operating illegally for years, speeding up liabilities, doubling fines prematurely. We filed another suit last summer because the city was funneling distracted driving tickets to the administrative courts when the law says they're not allowed to do that, and the reason for that is because they get to keep all the fines. If they send them to state court, they have to split half the money with the state. And now this is part three. So this is not an isolated lawsuit challenging a single aspect of the city's municipal fine structure. It's part of a bigger problem, and I think people need to be aware of it. I think the people in charge of the city need to take a deep breath and take a look at their entire system to see if they're operating it properly and fairly. And, you know, there's been some stories out over the past couple months. There was a study done by the Woodstock Institute showing that the way the city operates its fine structure disproportionately impacts lower socioeconomic communities. And it's true. I mean, if you keep jacking these fines up because you need to fill your budget gap, people aren't going to be able to afford them anymore. Well, that's what happens to a lot of people.
And that has been proven. They've done studies and show that people who can least afford the these types of tickets and citations are actually getting the most in those communities. And some people have been interviewed talking about how it's between food and fines in some cases, because it can get pretty pricey. Let's talk about what kinds of violations you are talking about here. It's like parking in a fire lane, double parking downtown in the downtown district, parking within 15 feet of a fire hydrant or that type of stuff, driving without a city sticker.
Surprisingly enough, the city hasn't increased all of their fines above the cap, but there's quite a few, and you've listed a few. The big one is probably the city sticker violation. That's probably the most common violation.
That's the worst.
2.5 million people last year got that ticket driving without proper city sticker
because they don't send the reminder in the mail anymore.
That's right. That's correct.
And then there's the improperly tinted windows, expired meter in the loading zone, and a couple other ones that you mentioned. But yeah, it's quite a few.
Are you looking at my record?
I was going to say, Violetta's like, yes, yes.
I just paid four tickets.
I got on.
Two of them doubled.
So what do they double to? What numbers are you talking about here?
They double. So you got like city stickers, a $200 fine, it doubles to $400. Ooh. And I'll tell you, most of the people I've talked to don't pay because they don't want to or they're scoffalls or anything like that. It's because they can't afford it.
Right.
They can't afford it. And if they get two tickets, let's say they get dinged for two tickets in one day,
or back-to-back days that's $400, they're not going to be able to afford it, and the next thing you know, it's $800. And they have to decide, should I pay my rent for the month?
Right.
Or should I pay the city $400 because I forgot to buy my city stick?
Exactly.
It does come down to that. I mean, Chicago taxpayers have taken some hits in recent years dealing with our unfunded pensions crisis, and taxes all around have gone up, and it does seem as if the city has gotten, maybe it's just my experience, it seems as if we've gotten more aggressive in this area of issuing citations. Have you seen numbers that reflect that? Are they issuing more tickets for these kinds of minor infractions?
I don't have the data on how many violations are issued. I know that there were some reports, I think just a couple weeks ago, that said that the city of Chicago issues tickets at a higher per capita than Los Angeles and New York. So it's definitely a high volume problem. And I'll share a story with you, because a gentleman called my office yesterday, and he's a truck driver. So he left for his job for 42 days, and he came back to find 44 tickets on his car. And they're all for the same thing. Every day the meter maid came by and gave him a city sticker ticket. Every day the meter maid came by and gave him a license tab ticket. And next thing you know, he had, you know, $16,000 in fines because he went to go do his job. So if the people in charge of the city would take a deep breath and take a look at how
they're impacting
their
citizens,
system is being implemented, and whether it's being implemented fairly, you tell me, is the story I just told you, does the crime fit the punishment there?
No, $16,000
because the guy left his car there for 40 days so he could drive a truck?
It's not right.
And so far, the only thing that gets the city's attention is lawsuits. That's the only thing that gets them to change. The city stopped doing what they're doing with the traffic program. They're now sending distracted driving tickets to the proper court, and hopefully they'll look at their fine structure as a result of this lawsuit. But other than that, they just sit on their hands and, I should say put their hands out and collect the money.
Yeah, well, it's out, that's sure. We were talking about this, and we were saying how difficult it is to fight a ticket that you might receive, whether it's by mail or in person, and that it doesn't seem like there's a high probability that you're going to win that, even if you are in the right. And we had one person, her name was Elizabeth, I believe, called in earlier and said she won one, and we were surprised by that.
We found her.
We found the one person who's able to fight City Hall and win. I don't know how often you see individuals. You're a big-time law firm, and you're able to take on these battles, but do citizens have a chance if they feel they're wrongfully getting these tickets, individually fighting them?
As I started out this call, the deck is stacked against them already because they have no due process rights that are forwarded to a typical court. So it's already difficult enough, and the rules are favorable for the city. You don't have to be in the car. It could be your kid who borrowed your car, and you're liable for it. So I have seen, obviously, there are people who succeed, but I think the probability of succeeding is very small.
Expired city stickers. We have a listener who would like to know, is that included in this?
Yes, because if it's expired, you'd get the sticker as if you don't have the current sticker at all. So you get the same ticket as having no city sticker.
And what about driving on a cell phone without hands free?
Well, that was lawsuit number two.
Oh,
that was our second lawsuit covering those tickets because they were being sent to the administrative court. So your caller is asking whether, if you went to the administrative court, then yes, that violation would be covered by our second suit. But since the suit has been filed, the city is no longer sending them to administrative court. They're sending them to state court where they belong. So current tickets, distracted driving, are not part of the suit. Prior tickets in the administrative court are.
They're handling them properly now because of your lawsuit, is what you're saying.
Yes. Correct. They're handling them in the right court now.
And so you're seeking class action status for this. How is that going, and when will people understand if they can join the class? How soon do you think that will happen?
Well, the wheels of justice turn slowly, and it'll take some time. I think it took between the time we began investigating and came to occlusion, it was about 4 years for our last suit, which is actually rather quick for a class action. So we just filed this on Tuesday, so it's not going to be Friday. It's probably going to be a couple of years before we, get to a conclusion in this suit. But what will happen is we'll seek class certification, and when that is granted, a notice will go out in the mail to the class members. So that's what they should be keeping an eye out for.
So be patient, Violetta. Very patient. It's going to take some time for your...
I'm not driving in the meantime.
It's going to be a long time without driving. Okay. All right, JC, Zolna, anything else we need to know? We appreciate your time here.
I don't think so. Other than that, I hope that people start paying attention to all the problems that are going on, not just with the city abusing the municipal fine structure, but also the results and the harm that it's causing to our most vulnerable citizens, because that's a big problem in the city right now.
I would agree. JC Zolna, thank you. From Myron M. Cherry and Associates, thank you for your time, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, do you guys hear the Brady Bunch
mm-hmm.
home? The home that was featured in the mm-hmm. Brady Bunch show that we're all familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
For sale in Los Angeles for $1.8 million. Mm-hmm. They're selling the home. The first time it's been available in nearly 50 years. I guess the owners have died. Their children are selling the property. And a lot of people seem interested, or at least they're interested in touring it, because they get 30 to 50 visitors a day, or people who pretend to be prospective buyers.
And there are a lot of people thinking, well, because it is sort of a classic 1960s split level.
Yeah,
and people are figuring someone's going to tear it down and put up an $8 million, you know, McMansion.
Well, that's the children are saying that people who buy it, they'll be given first preference, will be given to people who promise in writing not to rehab the home in terms of major structural issues. They don't want a developer to buy it.
That makes sense. I do wonder if when someone buys it, if you really start digging around, going up into the attic, if anyone will find the bodies of Mrs. Brady's first husband and Mr. Brady's first wife.
Yuck.
Because we never really heard what happened to them, but clearly they both died when the children were very young.
It's very strange.
Just seems to me like it's very convenient that, like, you know, it's like, okay, I've got these three boys and you've got these three girls, and, you know, if
only perfect.
It's like it's like body heat. If it was only convenient, if maybe somebody would disappear. Oh, you're a widow? I'm a widower. What a shocker.
Went very dark on the Brady Bunch, wow. Richard Roper.
You know, this is interesting because it comes a day after the Full House home, you know, that one in San
mm-hmm.
Francisco. This city banned tour buses from going by that home.
That's right, because they said it was too crazy, that they didn't want all the looky-loos and the people coming by.
I can't think of two more iconic homes than that one, the Brady Bunch one and the Full House.
Well, Norman Bates has something to say about that.
The Home Alone house.
Yeah, and the 16 Candles house just sold here in the Chicago area recently.
Beautiful house.
And also, if you're going to Albuquerque, the people who live in Walter White's house mm-hmm. from Breaking Bad asked you that you do not throw pizzas on the roof of the garage. People watched the show know there was a famous episode, and people started going there and throwing pizzas on the roof of the garage and doing photo. There's an actual family living there.
Our producer came in here and said we should all buy the Brady Bunch house and then Airbnb it for all the Brady Bunch fans. Sorry, did I put the word out?
Genius.
We were really
going to
do that?
No.
Were we really?
Well,
$1.8 million? I guess we can't now.
I can contribute like $50.
No, you're in.
Can cover
for 50?
The rest. I'm in.
Rich,
you get a dish rag in the kitchen. Well, you know, the truth is you would make your money back eventually. If you buy the house, you go Airbnb, you decorate it exactly like the interior, and then people be like, well, I want Greg's room. Well, that's $650 on a weekend.
With the bunk beds? Didn't they have the bunk beds?
Oh, yeah. It looks like the wood paneling in one of those rooms and the staircase.
Did they share a bathroom? Did the bathroom
Jan and Marsha did.
Yeah.
Didn't they? And Cindy? I think they did.
Did any of the kids like each other?
In real life or on the show?
On the show.
It was a complicated mess in real life.
Hey,
on the show.
Peter just figured out where there's no blood between us.
Siblings. I don't really remember the show,
goodness,
other than the intro.
I wonder how Tiger went on the AstroTurf back in the backyard.
Sorry to our producer for putting out our plan there. We were really going to do it, too. Brady Bunch home could be yours for $1.885 million in Los Angeles. It's for sale. So let's check in now. As soon as I give you this, the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace. This is the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Rose back tomorrow. Richard Roper is here with us, and We've got some movies to review, a couple of sequels in particular.
Exactly, and a big weekend for movies, and it looks like we might have some rain. So if you want to escape and go see a movie, we've got some good ones.
Perfect.
We'll talk about. Let's talk first about Equalizer 2. Now, some people might remember that was a TV series way back in the day, and then a few years ago, they made a movie with it, with Denzel Washington, and he plays the obligatory retired CIA operative who can do everything, but just wants to live the quiet life in retirement, you know, and of course, that never happens. And it's set in the Boston area, which is kind of cool because you see some cool neighborhoods around in and around the Boston area. So his character of John McCall is working as a Lyft driver now, living the anonymous life. Nobody knows that he was an Army war hero and in a one-man killing machine. But as a Lyft driver, sometimes he sees things that, you know, that are injustices. Mm-hmm. And one day
they require attention.
And he picks up in the scene we're going to listen to a little bit here, and he picks up a young woman who is clearly just been assaulted. You know, her blouse is ripped. She's crying. There's a bruise on her face. So he drops her off, makes sure she's okay. I think actually, you know, brings the police in. But then he decides, before bringing the police in, he goes back to visit the bros, the bunch of rich bros in their apartment who clearly had assaulted and done horrible things to this young woman. And this is Denzel. Now, they just think he's a Lyft driver when he comes back to their apartment.
How you doing? I'm the Lyft driver that you called to take home your girlfriend.
Not a girlfriend, man.
Oh, credit card was invalid.
Come in. There you go. Pay yourself whatever and give yourself a nice tip.
Thank you. You're not going to ask me if she got home okay? This is the point where usually I'd give you a chance to do the right thing, but not tonight. Tonight I'm going to need your cameras, cell phones, anything you might have used to record what you did to her.
You knocked on the wrong door tonight, Pops.
Oh, maybe it's the other way around.
Yeah, and that little beep you hear, he's setting his watch at 30 seconds because that's how long it's going to take him to dismantle, fracture, dismember, and maim the six idiots in the room.
Oh, my gosh.
Because he's the equalizer.
Intense. I love Denzel.
Denzel's so great too. In this role, and I'm giving this movie 3 stars. It's completely over the top. It's also, you got to know, it's R-rated. It's very violent, but Denzel elevates it with his acting. He's so good. And some of the scenes are just, you know, those kind of crazy action scenes. But there are some moments where he really gets serious. And there's some great comedy as well. And it's just a great character. I'm just hoping one day we get Liam Neeson's character from Taken and Denzel's character from the Equalizer movies, like together on a bus or a train. And then when the hijacker stands up, they just look at each other like, okay, I'll take those 50. You take those 50, you terrorist. Perfect. So 3 stars for the Equalizer 2.
I did not see, and forgive me, I did not see Equalizer 1. Did that perform well at the box office and get a good review?
It did do well. And it just, you know, and the truth is it sets up very easy targets, Anna. It stacks the deck. The bad guys are so bad. You know, so evil, so awful, that when he extracts this kind of vigilante street justice on them, they have it coming to them.
Yeah.
And you Roper, know. I heard that this is...
Excuse me? Richard? Oh, Mr. Roper?
Mr. Roper on a second reference?
I'm sorry.
She just called me by my last name.
She did.
I was wondering...
Turn off her mic.
I heard that this is Denzel's first movie that he came back for a sequel.
Sorry. Well, I'm just not
Mr.
answering.
Mr. Roper?
Yes. What's your question?
Never mind.
Okay. We were just getting some breaking news.
We were getting Anna's something in our ears. So sorry about that. Violetta, did you have a very pertinent question to ask Richard, Mr. Roper?
No, I just heard that this is the only movie that Denzel has come back to do a sequel for. Is that true?
Now that I think about it, yeah. And, you know, you'd think he'd have many franchises over the years, but because he's turned down, you know, roles in some of these movies that are franchised. But Equalizer, I think, it's a fun character to play. And he's an interesting guy because he's got a little bit of an OCD thing. He's still grieving for his wife. So there's some, you know, dramatic heft as well. But then there's also just the great scenes where, like, one moment a guy has two eyes and then a second later he just has one eye.
Ooh. You know? So I love him as a good guy.
He's a great guy. He's a good, he's
and
a
like
classic anti-hero. And this one is directed by Antoine Fuqua, who directed Denzel's Academy Award winning performance in Training Day. Graduated at the University of Illinois, by the way, Antoine Fuqua.
That's
great
very
director.
Cool. Training Day.
So check it out. If you're into that kind of film, it succeeds at what it wants to be.
Okay. Well, we're going to find out if you can resist Mamma Mia. Here we go again for the Mamma Mia crew. This is, I'm excited about this one. I want to hear about it, what you have to say.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're interested. Yeah, again, now we're talking about a sequel here, and you know, first there was the musical based on, you know, all those catchy songs from ABBA. That actually came out, believe it or not, 10 years ago, and it was a big hit. So now here we have the sequel, which tells the story, the backstory of Meryl Streep's character, who's played by Lily James. You might remember her from Downton Abbey. She was in Baby Driver. So she plays the young Donna in the late 70s. Because remember, the plot of Mamma Mia is young woman boinks three different men on three consecutive evenings, and then her daughter, 20 years later, tries to figure out who dad is.
So she has three choices for daddy, yeah, trying to figure out.
That's the plot of Mamma Mia, which sounds like the plot of like a David Mamet drama, but is actually the plot of Mamma Mia, which one's really my daddy? Now this one is set 5 years after the events of the original. And spoiler alert, because this comes out in the first like 30 seconds of the movie, the Meryl Streep character, she's dead. Mm-hmm. Mama died. Mamma Mia died sometime between the events of the first movie and this movie. They never say why.
Well,
now she's dead. So now Amanda Seyfried, who plays her daughter, is reopening the hotel. And it's all about that. And really, it's all about how you can get a bunch of actors who can't sing to sing the songs of ABBA.
I heard Pierce Brosnan was not so
well,
good.
Well, that's the cast.
Singing.
You know, the cast, the three dads, and they're all back. Pierce Brosnan, Colin Firth.
Uh-huh.
And Stellan Skarsgård, okay. And they're joined this time around by Andy Garcia, another non-singer. There are men of a certain age who have actually been trained on Broadway and can sing, and
yeah,
they keep hiring these guys who can't sing.
These guys are so cute.
When you hear me knocking, SOS.
No way,
it's basically
that bad?
About that level. Listen, here,
okay, but I love
here,
the mom. I love
I'll
ABBA
what,
and all the
what?
Songs, and it's always so fun.
It is,
to
and
watch.
Here's the thing. That's why I'm giving it 2 stars because it's hard. It's not. It's got good spirit and energy, and if you like that kind of pure escapism, and it makes no sense because in the first movie, Meryl Streep's character talks about how her mother is dead in the first movie, was a very strict Catholic who disapproved of her. In this movie, they resurrect Grandma. All of a sudden, she's alive again, and it turns out she's Cher, and she wasn't a strict Catholic who disapproved of her daughter's lifestyle. She was a touring musician. They just changed it up. And I got to say one thing, too, Anna, and I thought of you when I wrote this in my review, and I'm going to say this again. Both Mamma Mia movies are set on a fictional island off the coast of Greece, right? And they film it on a real island off the coast of Greece. And here's the thing that drives me nuts about this. There are no Greeks in the movie! Other than very small supporting roles, they're all Americans, they're British, they're Swedish.
Do they have like a Greek waiter that shows
Greeks?
Up or anything?
They're all just caricatures. It's the old woman with the, you know, stick of the branches on her head who doesn't say
wearing
anything.
Wearing all black and
Yes. I mean, and even in the big production numbers where there's 500 people dancing, you keep looking, you go, none of those people appear to be Greek.
Couldn't find one.
Why do you set it in Greece if you're not going to have some Greeks? My Big Fat Greek Wedding, you know who they had in that movie? Greeks!
They did. They actually did because it was set in Greektown here in Chicago.
And it was about Greek people.
But you know Cher, I love Cher. And she's releasing an album of ABBA cover songs. So she's doing the same.
Andy Garcia's character is actually named Fernando just so she can sing Fernando to him.
I love that song.
And just for the record, Cher's playing Meryl Streep's mother. Cher's 72 and Meryl Streep is 69. So
how does that work?
I guess
it's just movies. That's the way it works.
Yeah.
I like that. But they really do love each other. Have you seen them on all the promotional tours? They kiss on the lips, Cher and Meryl Streep. They just are like, hi. And they seem to really love each other.
If you want to hear
Super
Troopers again. And
is this
Mamma
one not going to do well, do you think? At the box office?
I don't think it'll do better. It's targeted toward a demographic, which is mostly middle-aged females who don't get a lot of movies made for them.
Right.
Although Andy Garcia earlier this year was in the book club. So now he's got the book club and Mamma Mia, too.
He has been in a lot of
guy who was once considered
movies.
One of our up-and-coming fiery actors is in the book club and Mamma Mia,
from
too.
From The Godfather to Mamma Mia, too. He's done it all, our Andy Garcia. Yes. And I'm a big fan of his, too.
Well, wait till you hear him singing.
I mean, we're not going to like him anymore.
It just boggles the mind. It's like when they cast Russell Crowe in the movie version of Les Mis.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe.
Yeah, why? Well, did you like Mamma Mia 1?
No, I didn't like
it. Well, there you go.
Again, the songs are, you know, they're these catchy, you know, bubblegum confections. If you like the music, you're going to hear the songs, but it just it amazes me that they get a bunch of people who really can't sing. Amanda Seyfried and Lily James, they can sing okay.
Yeah, they can.
And, you know, they're
she was
okay.
in Les Mis, and she was great.
And Cher. Yeah.
And Cher, by the way,
well, Cher,
knows how to do
Cher
it.
Cher can't move her mouth anymore. She looks like actually a hologram of Cher when she tries to sing. Oh, we have a little bit of Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, let's hear. Are you singing?
Yes.
Okay.
Where are those happy days? They seem so hard to find. I tried to reach for you, but you have closed your mind. Whatever happened to our love? I wish I understood. It used to be so nice, it used to be so good.
I think you're better, Richard.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, he's
It's basically every family party where you're like, oh, God, Uncle Pierce is going to sing karaoke again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here he comes. He thinks he sings this song well. He's going to get up to the mic and just go ahead, humor him. Well, but it still sounds enjoyable to me. Sounds like something I would check out.
You go have a good time.
We're going to check what's coming up in the news in a second, but what are we going to tell us about Richard after that?
We're going to come back and talk about two movies that are getting incredible buzz, Eighth Grade and Blindspotting.
Okay, this segment, by the way, I should say, and Richard Roper's segment always is sponsored by Architect, and we thank them for that.
What is your problem with Val?
Val is a disloyal. When you were in jail, did she put money on your books? Did she come visit you even one time, Arita, while you were locked up? Because I'm pretty sure I went two times a week, 45 minutes each way, $500 on your book on day one.
She talked to me on the phone.
How gracious of her to have called you once. And what did she want to talk to you about changing up your lifestyle, changing up your ways? You're not a thug, drug dealer. You went to jail on a fire technicality.
Did I?
Yes. How are we supposed to know that hipsters are so flammable?
The Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis. Richard Roper is here. He's reviewing for us, and we've got Equalizer 2 with Denzel Washington. 3 stars. Go see that. Mamma Mia 2. Disappointing. 2 stars for that. But if you like Cher, Meryl Streep, and Pierce Brosnan doing bad karaoke, you will probably like it. And ABBA. I mean, you can't go wrong with the ABBA tunes.
Mm-hmm.
But now you've got some other...
yeah, that was Blindspotting. We just heard a clip from there, Anna. And if people don't know about this movie, it's got a lot of buzz. I think it's going to be... on a lot of 10 best lists of some of the finest filmmaking we've seen all year, I think it's going to do very well as at the box office as well. So Blindspotting is basically the story of two boyhood friends who are now young men growing up in gentrifying Oakland as they see the neighborhood around them. One friend is black, one friend is white, and it has tons to say about the nature of their friendship and about racism in America and social justice. David Diggs is the star of this film. He won the Tony on Broadway for playing Jefferson in Hamilton.
Yes, yes.
And Rafael Casale, who is his real-life friend, they actually did know each other. A little bit later, they met in real life in that area. They also co-wrote this, and they're both just absolutely brilliant, and this film is very funny. And at times you get so infuriated when you see some of the things that happen. It has a lot to say, again, about race relations without hitting you over the head. I think in a way it reminds me of Do the Right Thing for this generation, where you see a lot of people who are trying to do the right thing, but sometimes their prejudices get in the way and sometimes society gets in the way. And one of the points they make over and over in this movie is that the Rafael Casale, his character, the white guy, is actually more of the instigator and the troublemaker. But as David Diggs' character and his friends point out, every time the police roll up, if they see the one guy, they're going to put the cuffs on the black guy and dreads. And there are scenes in this movie that those of us who are Caucasian and sometimes feel like we can't relate, and you never can until you walk a mile in someone's shoes, or actually there are some scenes where you really understand what it's like for someone who is walking down the street doing nothing wrong and knows that that police cruiser that sees him at a certain time of night in a certain neighborhood is going to pull a U-turn and put the squad lights on and ask him what he's doing there. And it really brings that home. I'm giving 4 stars to Blindspotting. It's a different film, too, because the two characters both kind of freestyle and do almost like hip-hop at some times in the movie, within the movie. It's not a musical, but it has that feel to it. And there are some really powerful moments, and both of them are off-the-charts talents. They're charismatic and great together. It's funny. It's heartbreaking at times. It's also inspirational. I really just urge people to take a chance on a movie called Blindspotting.
I'm going to now, that's for sure. Is there any word about whether or not some of this is drawn from their own lives when they wrote the script?
Yes, some of the experiences. They've been working on this on and off for 10 years together while each of them was trying to make a go of it as an actor. Rafael Casale actually taught at Wisconsin for 3 years up in Madison. And, of course, David Diggs, you know, he hadn't done a whole lot. And Lin-Manuel Miranda got a hold of a tape of his at one point and said, "I've got my guy." And he couldn't believe he got cast in this thing. And then he just absolutely knocks it out of the park. So this is a film that they've wanted to do together for a long time. And you're going to hear a lot more from these two guys. But this is brilliant stuff. I could see this getting Oscar? Some nominations, you know, in particular for the performances and the screenplay.
Good to hear.
And now, the Rokan Show presents News or Ruse, a true game of true wit and skill. And now, here's your master of ceremonies, Rokan.
Thank you, Mr. Duffy. I'll take it. Rokan is off today. He has survived his procedure. He did call into the show, I want everyone to know, and everything went well. Details to follow tomorrow. The colonoscopy I'm referring to. But we're going to play News or Ruse, and Patty Vasquez is here.
I hope not too many details. I
well,
mean, only
well
so
you're not wrong.
That we, it's true. Fair point.
Okay. He likes to really dig in on the medical stuff, and I'm sure we'll all be bothered.
Listen, I had to talk him out of live streaming the thing, okay? Trust me.
We're like, please don't post anything on social media. Just wait.
Oh, no, I happy you did it. I can see him in the back open. No.
We're happy you got it all done and everything's fine.
He keeps his socks on. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
We wanted him to call in on the anesthesia.
For everything
but,
he does.
Oh, gee. All right. You guys don't need to hear this. We're playing News or Ruse. We have three dignified listeners playing here, Patty and Richard Roper.
Okay. My apologies.
So our apologies to you. You, Eileen, you're playing with Ryan Burrow. Eileen, are you there?
I am.
Hello.
Hello.
Dave, you're playing with Violetta. So, Dave.
Hey, Violetta, let's beat Roper.
Yeah.
Wow. How dare you.
Wow. Sights on you, Rich. Yeah.
And he didn't even say Mr. Roper.
Oh.
He's Mr. Roper to you, Violetta. That's what he said. Chris.
I'm on Violetta's side.
Chris and Patty. Chris, you there?
I am here. Let's do it.
Here's what you're playing for. A grand prize winner gets a pair of pavilion tickets to Ravinia, two drink tickets to the new Lawn Bar. Ooh. Thursday, August 2nd, to see the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra performing the score live.
That's
how about
cool.
that?
Very cool.
Pack a picnic, dine, isn't it? Dine in Ravinia's newly renovated dining facility. Get tickets at Ravinia.org. Runners up, get pair of four lawn tickets to see the exact same thing, Chicago Symphony Orchestra performing the live score. You can get your tickets at Ravinia.org. Everybody gets a never measure, easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations fast and eliminate the need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. Veteran owned and made in the United States of America. Get yours, nevermeasure.com. All right, you ready to play? Eileen, you're first with Ryan. Here is your headline. News or Ruse? Florida porn producers pushing legislation that would criminalize posting homemade videos online.
That would make sense. He would want to do that because that's his profession. So, I don't know. Where do you go with this, Eileen?
Oh, man. What do you think? I'm going to say Ruse. What do you think?
All right. Yep. Just because it says Florida doesn't mean it's true. So, I'll go with you.
All right. So, you're saying Ruse, right, Eileen?
Correct.
You got it. Way to call it out, Eileen.
Very nicely played. And by the way, I've decided to join Anna as co-host. That way I can't lose. So take that, Dave and Violetta, because this question's for you. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. Here's the question. Here's the headline. Oh, is it news or ruse? Ready? Illegal dumping scheme lands portable toilet executive in prison.
Great.
News.
I'm going with Dave.
Wow. Dave's good at this. Wow. All right. You got it.
Nicely done.
Way to go, Dave.
All right.
Way to go, Dave.
I was the executive.
How dare you?
Chris and Patty, no pressure.
No
Everyone's
pressure.
Got one right. Yeah, here's yours.
We got this, Chris. All right.
Oh, man.
Knives are too sharp, and filing them down is solution to soaring violent crime, judge says.
Oh, gee.
What
do you
think? I'm going to say ruse, because I don't think any judge would be that silly.
I don't know. But yeah, I'll stick with Chris. Let's say ruse.
Oh! Just when you thought the judges couldn't be that like that, it actually happened. The soaring knife epidemic. This is out of the UK, by the way. So
it's
their problem, not ours.
If they could just make the knives a little less sharp.
This.
It sounds like a Monty Python
routine.
Could you
tell that a little?
Yeah, make the sharp knives go away. All right, are you ready? Dave and Violetta, here you go. Here's your headline. Is it news or ruse? Ready?
Yeah, we could go. Sure.
I thought it was Eileen and Ryan.
Yeah, I think it's our turn.
Eileen and Ryan, get the next one.
Okay. Sorry about that. You ready?
Yeah,
me too. I just hope that at one point Ryan goes, come on, Eileen. Oh,
I've been waiting.
All right. Here we go. I'm going to give you guys the headline. Judge sides with school that uses electric shocks on its students. He sides with the school that is using electric shocks on its students.
Okay, we don't understand the context of that. I mean, maybe it's some kind of cool science project, but still.
Listen, Walter Cronkite.
It seems a little weird, though. So, what's your gut feeling, Eileen?
I'm going with Ruse again.
Okay.
Sadly, that's true.
Okay, then they don't get that ding. Oh, wait a minute. Didn't they say Ruse?
You got it wrong, so you don't get the ding.
There you go. It's not a fair
thing. We're not going the presidential way. When you're right, you're wrong, and when you didn't, you couldn't.
Did I say would?
I said would.
Yes. This is a real story, guys.
You got that wrong. Sorry about that, guys. County. It's so too bad. This is going well. All right. We've got Dave and Violetta. Are you ready for your headline?
Yes.
Car carrying boxes of bees in head-on crash after driver stung.
Sorry. Or terrible. If it's true.
Dave, I'm going to say Rouge, but I'm not very good at this.
I agree. I think it's time for a Rouge.
All right, Rouge.
True.
Oh, boy.
Absolutely true.
Chris, it's our shot to tie it up, man.
Yeah, you really do have an opportunity here, Patty.
All right, it's time now for Chris and Patty. You got a chance to get right back into the game. Are you ready? Seagulls are getting drunk on leftover booze and throwing up on firefighters.
Oh, that's great.
There's two elements to this story, Patty. Seagulls are getting drunk on leftover booze and throwing up on firefighters. Chris and Patty.
I don't know. These ones are so out there.
They really
what
are.
What do you think, Patty?
I need it to be true, and so I'm willing to be wrong to say it's true.
Okay, let's go true.
News.
You got
Nicely
it.
Nicely done. Seagulls may be getting drunk on leftover alcohol left on Southwest beaches when firefighters were called to rescue one seagull that was reeking of beer and then promptly threw up all over them.
Not a flock of seagulls, but seagulls.
That's very well done. We're staying with the 80s theme. And also, that'll be a Pixar movie in 2021. The Drunk Seagulls, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my gosh. Poor firefighters.
What a contest we have going here.
We do. We have it all tied up at one apiece. And so when we come back, we're going to have the Orion Samuelson round.
Exciting.
And we're going to get even more exciting then, but we're going to check and see what the headlines are with Ryan Burrow right now, top of the hour. Isn't that what we're doing, Ryan?
Oh, yeah. We could talk more about the Iowa storm. Sorry about that. Looking a lost track. All coming up at 7 o'clock. Andrea Darlis will be on for that one.
Oh, okay. Andrea Darlis will be up for that. Violetta, will you be doing traffic?
At 7? No, but I can do it right now.
Fine. All right, we're in the middle of News or Ruse, and we've got Patty Vasquez here. Richard Roper is here. Eileen is playing with Ryan. Dave's playing with Violetta. Chris is playing with Patty, and it is all tied up at the moment. Sudden death, Orion Samuelson round. We start with Eileen and Ryan. Here is your headline.
Giant goldfish who steal sperm to clone selves spotted in Saskatchewan.
There's a lot going on there, Eileen. I mean, there's a lot going on, and I'm completely distracted by Orion is the one who's saying it.
I had to read that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Orion.
What do you think, Ryan? Do you think news?
My hunch says it's fake, but I don't understand why anyone would even conceive that if it was fake. So I don't know. Do you have a leaning one way or another?
I'm leaning towards news, but I'll go with you.
No. This is your dime, your dance. So don't lean on me. Trust me.
You guys are so cute.
Eileen, come on, Eileen.
Okay. Come on, Eileen is going to say news.
Totally.
News. Well done.
All right, that's
overruling
how you
the
do
Ryan.
It.
And, I like it.
She's
Orion
got good
went,
instincts.
Went 57 years in his career without using a certain word that was in that headline. I've never said sperm.
Right.
No,
it has happened. Dave and Violetta
can
here.
Can we get some context of that?
You want a little context? Hundreds of Prussian carp, a female fish that can replicate itself using sperm from other species, have been found in the Saskatchewan waters. So they are an invasive species in Canada, and they're in the same genus as goldfish. So that's what they do. They steal the sperm, and then they produce the babies.
Which is funny, because they're like little fishes.
Yes, okay. We got Dave and Violetta. Here is your Orion Samuelson headline.
The topics on your pizza say a lot about personality, a study finds.
Kind of does, doesn't it, I would think?
Dave. Dave.
News.
News.
You got it. Chris and Patty. Way to go.
All right. All right. No pressure.
Your Orion headline.
Wait a minute.
Wait.
They said that was news.
They said it was news. Oh, I'm sorry. I had my, sorry. That was wrong.
That's strike two.
I just, you guys were not right on
you
that.
You aren't. For correction. Time had expired for correction.
No, it didn't. I had those reversed on my sheet. They took them out of order. So I was looking.
I do feel like the toppings on your pizza do say a lot about your personality, actually. But
yes, they do. Come on, we should get that question.
I'm sorry, guys.
I don't know how to tell you guys that if you were wrong a minute ago, you're still wrong a minute later. This is not the White House press office.
Wrong, wronger.
It's a Roper conspiracy.
Oh, geez, now I'm
all
getting
right,
thrown in.
Pipe
the
down, pipe
deep
down.
Deep state, deep state.
We've got Chris and Patty. They have to get their chance here.
Okay.
We have, and just don't forget what you're playing for here, people, because this is huge, huge, huge. Pair of pavilion tickets to Ravinia, two drink tickets to the new Lawn Bar, Thursday, August 2nd. See the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra performing that score live. Pack a picnic, dine in Ravinia's newly renovated dining facility. Get your tickets at Ravinia.org, and if you're a runner-up, you get a pair of four lawn tickets to see the same movie. Everybody gets a Never Measure, nevermeasure.com, hang your wall decorations fast, so... Nice prizes and a lot on the a lot of stake here, Patty and Chris. Here is your headline.
So nervous.
Florida city warns residents of power outages, zombies.
What? Was that comma zombies?
You guys do this on purpose. Because... You know the Florida ones are difficult.
Wait, because of zombies or and zombies? Okay. What's your... every time there's a zombie story, I feel like it's true. I don't know why. What do you think, Chris? We can go ruse. I feel like you want to say ruse, don't you?
I think I want to say ruse, yeah.
All right, I'm going to go with you. Sorry, Chris.
Sorry, guys.
I was trying to tell you. I don't know why.
We have a winner in this, and it is Eileen playing with Ryan Burrow. Good job, Eileen.
I
you are the winner.
Very good.
I do need to find out why there are zombies in Florida.
Yeah, that one I didn't have copy for, so okay. Unfortunately we're going to have to get that one to you separately. Thank you for playing News or Ruse. We appreciate it. And Patty Vasquez, we'd like to, since you're here and your show is next, kind of find out what's coming up on your show tonight.
We got a lot of great stuff coming up on the show. Right now we're going to do that. Oh, wonderful. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Wonderful. We have, actually, Scott Santis will be here in a little bit. You know, Reverend Gregory Livingston, who wants to lead a protest and shut down Lakeshore Drive, will be joining us at 10 o'clock. I know people have a lot to say about
that.
Yeah.
And we also have, we were supposed to have the author of the dinosaur book. We don't know if he was on John's show earlier. Did you hear him?
The dinosaur book.
Yeah, he's got basically the rise and fall of dinosaurs and our planet and that kind of thing. But
I love dinosaur stories.
And the worst day in history.
Right.
When the meteor hit Earth.
Lord.
But I was listening to John's show and I was like, he has a book signing tonight, so I don't think he's actually on my show tonight.
And you thought he was booked?
That was our understanding. Oh. But if you're going out to Winnetka, you might be able to see the author of that book rather than on my show. Which
maybe he'll call in. Do you think that's possible?
That might be possible.
Okay.
We'll find out.
So you may or may not, you would or wouldn't have the dinosaur guy.
Correct.
On.
And we also have our friend from the Special Olympics to talk about the 50th anniversary that we're obviously celebrating.
That's it so is. Cool. It's such an incredible history here in Chicago. You think about that. Ann Burke and others who have started it.
That's true. Yeah.
And the way, how far it's come and the recognition it's given to children with special needs and the support and that kind of thing.
And it is such a great community of people that, you know, just love having to be, you know, being able to be around each other and celebrate together. And so Eileen McNamara will join us, as well as Holly Simon, whose son Nathan has been competing in the Special Olympics. People always ask me if my son does Special
does
Olympics.
He?
He's not interested. He doesn't have that, you know, we had an obstacle course one time and with, you know, some kids with sensory disorders and Declan's not verbal and intellectually challenged as well. They had this tunnel you're supposed to crawl through and we couldn't get him to come back out of the tunnel. So he was just like, lying down, and there's like, I don't know what stupid game you want. But other,
I'm not playing your silly games.
Like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
But there are obviously different areas that might be, some kids might be more willing to want to do than others, and they must play to that.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
To their abilities and what their interests are.
Exactly. Yeah. But Declan just will, you know, he'll wander off and just be like, I'm over here. You guys are yelling and screaming at everybody, but I'm going to go do something
else. I'm good.
Else.
I don't need your structure.
Well, right. It's like anything else. I mean, you know, not everybody participates in sports.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah.
Abled or disabled, and Declan's like, stick it. So.
Mm-hmm. Would he be interested in going to watch it, or have you ever gone to see any of the events?
No, Declan would.
He's
probably,
good. He's good.
Yeah, he's good.
He's like, all right. I'm not into this.
They have like special recreation programs. So we started when he was like 2 or 3 to see if it would be something. Hopefully, he could find an interest in. So it's not for a lack of trying.
Yeah,
but no. There's never, but some of the kids, my friend Bernadette, her daughter, has competed as a shot put thrower. Nathan does a lot of track and field. And
that's so cool.
It's really fun.
It is really fun. So you're going to be talking with
Eileen McNamara and Holly Simon from the I Am Who I Am organization that she created.
When is it? When is it coming up?
The Special Olympics? I believe it starts the 17th. What day is today? Maybe it already started.
Today is.
No. Oh, yeah. I should take a look and see.
Today is the 19th.
Oh, then never mind. I don't know when it starts. But it's maybe this weekend.
It's already started. Some of the games have already started.
That's what I thought. Andrea.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Probably was the 17th.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have a good show.
Thank you so much. It was great to see you guys.
Thanks for playing News or Ruse.
Sorry, Chris.
Oh, okay. We're talking. We don't have a break here, so we have an opportunity.
Listen,
here.
I just got a call from the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
This last half hour, really.
They'd like the file from 6:29, guys, till just
my
7
time
o'clock.
Is a game
it's
show
gonna
host.
Be playing for those of you waiting to get into the SNL exhibit. A little example of.
I'll tell you more about my show.
Listen, Patty. We got a chance to talk to Patty. This is the
Do
great thing
about. Do
you guys
want to hear about the worst day in the world's history?
The dinosaur book?
Oddly enough, we now are close to running out of time, Violetta. We want you to hang on to that story.
It was raining glass. It was really hot. All the dinosaurs died.
You realize
you're...
And that was the beginning... No, I learned it today on the John Williams show.
With the author that was supposed to be on my show. See?
How about that?
How did you think everything started before the John Williams show? What was your view of history, Violetta? Was there an arc that passed by cavemen?
No, I already heard the story, actually, from the time before land. But
what is it about this book that is attracting so much attention? Is this a Chicago author, or there's something...
He's actually a professor in Edinburgh. Ooh. And he's been traveling
around. I'd like to visit.
Mm-hmm. You know, he was saying that that there's a dinosaur. There are dinosaur remains being found every week. They continue to find... I wanted to find out how you go about finding them. If they're still somewhere.
Yeah, right.
But how do you come across that?
Just be careful,
you
because next thing you know...
You've got to find big rocks coming out of the sand, he said.
Paleontologist weighing in here again.
And, and there's fossils attached to those big rocks, and you can't find a lot in Illinois. Actually, I think there was never any dinosaur bones found in Illinois.
Did you ever see Raiders of the Lost Ark, Violetta?
No.
You can go see it at Ravinia with the Chicago
it's
Symphony
all her
Orchestra.
Science.
Because it's very helpful.
We'll
very
be doing helpful. A segment on NASA next week, and Violetta will be watching Guardians of the Galaxy as preparation for that.
See, so I was going to ask him. I was going to ask Steven what he thought of Jurassic World. So
when could that technology really happen? Right?
Well, didn't they just that would freak me out. Is not right. Everything I said is correct.
Oh, you're exactly
Did
historically accurate.
Did you like me to accurate. Talk to you about Pangea?
No, I think we're actually out of time now, so we need to toss it over to Patty Vasquez and Andrea Darlis. Two perfect people, and have a good night, guys.
Two perfect people. Now the bar
in my book.
Way too high. Oh, thank
well
you.
Done.
Right back at you.
Thanks, Anne, and I think you did a great job, by the way.
Thank you.
You're my favorite. I love you.
I love you, too. Hi, Andrea.
Freak power.
Let's do this show thing. We should do that thing? Andrea, are you ready for the whole next 4 hours? It's like four days in a row we started at 7.
Oh,
we haven't done that yet. Are you tired already?
Well, I worked the shift this morning, so this is my second shift.
I'm sorry. All right, I'll try to make it as painless as possible.